Blog Talk Radio.
Have another jab this Christmas. Now the Omicron is here. You know the joke of COVID toad, but still you live in fear. Have another jab for Christmas. When you're walking down the street, don't say hello to friends you know in distance of 6 feet. I know the TV show dictates what you think. Fear has infected you, turning off your brain. Have another jab for Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, OMG, the TV screen controls you with fear.
It's a basic, truly primal instinct, and it too is contagious.
Is there too much panic?
Spraying Chinese-looking people on the subway.
Does he have the coronavirus or not? I don't know.
Our brains evolved to respond to dangers that we sense around us on our screens. Remember, stress, anxiety, and fear can be useful.
We go to the extreme sometimes to gain control.
We're going to survive this just fine, but there's going to be a slight panic.
I'm Fauci, the Christmas boo. Lock you down tonight. You have been in quarantine because you're not so bright. Have another jab this Christmas. And if you were gonna ask, OMG, you're an NPC, cause you drive with a mask. Oh my golly, you're an NPC who drives with a mask.
Oh boy, our satanic power sure did the trick.
Okay, hello. Happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. I thought that I would start with a little Christmas jingle. I don't know. Seemed appropriate.
I love it. I love it. I thought it was Christmas music.
Exactly.
This is nice. And I thought I was in the green room for the Christmas music.
I just got back from a Christmas party, and gosh, I have to tell you that boaters are amazing, most of them, and see, they're right on the same level. An old friend named Rick, I saw him today at this Christmas party, and it was so cute. He's just like, you know, I like to just keep my head down, but, you know, Twitter files, right? And he brings up the Twitter files. I just, you know, I like to keep my head down, but satanic cabal. You know what I mean? Like, he was like, I'm like, why don't you listen to my show? Because this is exactly what we talk about every week. He's like, I don't really want to offend anybody. He lives in this land of I don't want to offend. And, you know, and
I think
it was just so interesting that he was there, you know, like, I'm like, please keep talking. Please call into my show, you know. People need to know that they're not alone
with
this stuff. He's not here.
Well,
I just left him. He's at a Christmas party for my husband. He's a marina tenant, and yeah, and I knew him back when we were members of a certain yacht club.
Another cult?
Yeah, they are cults.
A different cult? Yes, I know.
Silvergate
they
Yacht
really
Club?
Are.
Yep, that's a cult.
You know, there's hope for everyone, though. I had a conversation yesterday with my aunt, who we, you know, I flip-flop between loving them, and then it's like, dear God, where do I sign to get out of this family? Because it's like, I can't do this. Everyone has to be vaccinated to go to someone's home. Always, honey, but I'm the black sheep that turned out so very well, that they've always admired, you know, they've always taken care of. I am the black sheep, but they're proud of me. And love me dearly. I'm almost 60 years old. I get birthday cards from all my aunts and phone calls. And they're like,
no.
You know, 80, 90, right? So it's my birthday today. Happy birthday to me. And I'm an obnoxious girl on my birthday. Thank you, baby. And since I turned 50, I just, everybody has to know. It's my birthday. Which is crazy. So the ones that do remember, I'm like, oh, my God, I act like I'm humble and whatnot. So we have our conversation. Do you know what she told me yesterday? She quoted Klaus Schwab to me. She goes, and you know what's going to happen. You're going to have nothing to be happy. And I go, I'm so proud of you for knowing this. I couldn't believe that came out of her mind. But everybody knows about this. If she's heard this, she's not even on Facebook. She's worried to death that her son, who's lived in Japan for 30 years, coming home for Christmas, is not going to recognize the country that he left. Well, he was here like a year ago. But it's like it's gotten that, like that bad in their heads where it's like, it doesn't seem to be any different except for the propaganda they're giving you. You know, because if you turn the TV off, it's still a nice day. You don't know about the stock market. You don't know about social media, you know, betraying your confidence or whatnot. It's no different than it has been. But all of a sudden, she too is on that. You know, we've lost the country. And where did she hear about Klaus Schwab? Has Tucker Carlson talked about him? But somehow it's gotten out to the old people. So, you know, I think we're cutting it right now.
Here,
you know,
I have a question.
Sure.
Was she pro? Happy, or was she? Anti?
No, she can't believe. It was as if she stumbled upon the Holocaust. You know, and
that's not
nobody
funny.
Else.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
She found out what they're doing.
That might have
yes.
been anti-Semitic. Yes. I'm sorry if it was to some people.
Oh no. Well, the Holocaust was a bad thing. I'm always on the side of. The victims in World War II. But, you know, everybody pretended like nothing was going on. But nonetheless, no, she was just like, that was the clincher of how bad it's getting and where we're going with this country. And I was like, oh, my gosh, because, you know, we go into the, you know, she's like, what's going on? She always, this is what comes out of her mouth. You think with it? Do you think there's going to be civil war, she says.
Oh,
and I'm like,
okay.
No, everyone's way too well-behaved for civil war, unfortunately. But then we talked a little bit last night about how that's exactly what they want us to do. They divide us over, you know, and I just rattled off everything, you know, even down to the, you know, the Twitter. What is the newest thing they want us to kill each other over? I can't remember. But that's their end game, is to get us so whipped up over, you know, you're just horrible. The vaccine, the election, you know.
Whatever,
even she,
yeah, that
was
the thing.
I was like, yeah. And it's always something, but they want us that upset that we will just disintegrate, and it won't come from outside. It'll be, we will have demonized this faction against that faction, and, you know, given enough time, I know we were talking indoctrination of the colleges, and I said, you know, this is exactly what happened in communist China. She gave me years ago, 30 years ago, when my cousin went over to Japan, he read up on the Orient and wanted to know what was going on so he could kind of slip in and at least have some knowledge of what was going on over there. He works for Disney. And so she gave me this book called Wild Swans, and it was three generations of a family that went before the Cultural Revolution, during the revolution, which was this young girl who was brainwashed in the school system by Mao and overtook their country in one day by just doing what we do with a little bit of a riot. But they pulled professors and teachers and anyone, any prominence into the streets and put dunce caps on them and told them they were wrong and enemies of the state. And there were so many children that they overpowered them, and they were so well behaved that they didn't fight. I'm like, how did they not fight these kids? How did this actually happen? But this is exactly what goes on here, is they have quietly indoctrinated and brainwashed generation after generation of kids to where it will just be, I need to watch Hunger Games to know if I'm quoting right, and The Handmaid's Tale of Heaven, but I am one that I know of.
You have to watch Handmaid's Tale, of course.
But you will be the outcast, and you will be the hated one that they will hunt down because you don't think the way they do, and it's groupthink. And I told her, but we're not there, because you know how many people believe the way I believe and would like to say the things I say, but they're a little bit too afraid of ruffling feathers and maybe not getting the promotion, not being liked by their friends or what. But they all come up and say, hey, I love that hat. What if I wear my MAGA hat? Oh, they love it. And I'm just like, no shit. Well, thank you. And I look at these people, I'm like, I would have no idea that they would be on the side of, you know, daring to speak out. Because, you know, Trump was not a very popular man because he didn't speak eloquently as opposed to the last ringmaster that we had who said the right words and included everybody. So when I saw some of these folks, I'm like, well, you're all right in my book, and I'd fist bump them. But off they go into their seclusion quiet, and you wouldn't know that they voted until, you know, we had a conversation. I'll never forget when Trump first won, legitimately, and it was acknowledged. One of our guys were like, he was so downtrodden. He's Mr. Liberal, and now he's Mr., you know, coffee filter, the black silk coffee filter on their face. They all, it was the two or three of them, because it's that time of year again to virtual signal that they're better than everyone, and they're taking care of us with their masks. And it doesn't surprise me that he does this, but he was like such a liberal, and he was so upset over Trump winning. And who won against, who's running? It's so much has happened. Who was the Democratic person? Was it Hillary?
Yeah.
He was so disappointed. And there was like four of us there. I said, well, I voted for Trump. I had no problems with it. And three of the other guys who I wouldn't have even guessed, old guys. I voted. So I go, oh, 1, 2, 3 out of four people voted for him. That's what the polls are saying, and that's what the media said. It looks like the math is correct, Mike. And he was so mad, he almost blew into flames.
Let me just elaborate on that, because that is a great example of how in a crowd of four, one person can and does often control the narrative. Everybody was really, upset or put off, from saying something, from saying who they voted for because of the rage of this one person.
Exactly. That's a very good point to bring out. That's exactly.
Hold on one second. Mom is with us, and we did say for the first hour, we're 15 minutes now. But for the first hour, I would really like to get into the Twitter file. So, Mom, if you're there, press one. John is here, too, listening. So, hello.
Cool.
Okay. Here comes Mom. John, press one anytime you want to you want to add to the conversation. But here's Mom.
Hi. Happy birthday, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Oh, thank you, Carla. Thank you. I don't know why, but I woke up. It's my birthday. I didn't do anything major other than just, it's so cool to be alive and be this old. How are you?
I'm glad you were born.
Oh, Well, thank you, babe. Thank you. I'm certainly enjoying this. Let's see.
Okay, John just raised his hand. I'm going to let him into the conversation. There we go. Hello,
awesome.
John.
Welcome, John.
Hey, so it's somebody's birthday today,
it's
December 11th?
Birthday, darling. Thank you, babe.
It's
my co-host,
birthday.
Elizabeth.
Oh, is it your birthday as well?
Oh, my God.
I turned 40 today.
Oh,
40.
My God.
Okay.
We got to play some people.
Yeah.
All right. Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you. Happy birthday to you.
Right.
Usually what I do on my birthday is I tell everyone, happy John's birthday. It's not
all
like
right.
It's a holiday. but it's not mine anymore because now there's – I have to share it now.
I make it.
Yeah.
I make it the whole week.
Elizabeth.
My birthday week. Welcome to the show, John. I'm so glad you joined us.
Yeah.
And
same John from last week. I know John is a common name, but this is in fact the same John.
There are a lot of Johns out there.
Oh, dude, I'm extra glad that you called back. And cool. We got a regular. Yeah, because you are interesting. I enjoyed your conversation last week so much. No, thank you for coming back.
And it's a double birthday, so, wow. I mean, what are the odds? All right, okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to mom.
One in 365, roughly.
It could be, you know, yeah.
All right, so
mom,
the show must go on, has been preparing a segment on the Twitter files, all four of them. So I would like to turn it over to mom, and she can educate the audience on what exactly the Twitter files are and why we need to be following them. So, mom, take it over.
So, great. I'm excited because the Twitter files are an insider look at what Twitter executives and Twitter employees have been doing for the last longer. But we know for a fact over the last 6 years, Twitter has done everything to highlight certain people and shadow ban certain people so that it appears that a lot of people think the same way. And as a matter of fact, if you engage in what I jokingly call wrong think or wrong speak, you are silenced. Twitter is it's a social media site where people go to, actually a lot of people go there to get their news, which is kind of scary because apparently only certain kinds of news has been either, again, highlighted or shadow banned. The other interesting thing about Twitter is that journalists, so-called journalists, go to Twitter. These are the stories that they present to the American people through what we call the mainstream media. If it's trending on Twitter, then you can bet MSNBC, CBS, ABC, all the other goofballs, even Fox News, are going to highlight that story. And it not only just highlight the story, but they're going to slant it in the way that these supposed voices are slanting it on Twitter. And for years now, conservatives have howled, shrieked, stomped their feet, yelled, done whatever they needed to do to say they are shadow banning us, to the point where large social media company CEOs such as Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg have been called to Capitol Hill to account for themselves. And each time they were asked, they said, no, we are not shadow banning anyone. Well, it turns out that was true. Instead, what we find now that we're getting to – so, okay, let me back up the boat just a moment. It got so bad that there was a satire site called the Babylon Bee. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Babylon Bee.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of them? Yes. They're funny.
Yes.
Satire. Yes. And their stories The thing about satire is the closer it is to the truth, the funnier it is. Like it used to be The Onion, and everybody went to The Onion and laughed at The Onion's satire. And the Babylon Bee found this little niche and was, you know, making it, but they were poking fun at the left. Uh-oh, you're not allowed to do that. And the Babylon Bee got banned from Twitter. Apparently, that was it for Elon Musk. Elon Musk is a billionaire. He is an inventor. He is the owner, inventor of the Tesla automobile. And he said, look, it looks like I'm going to have to buy Twitter. And he tweeted that on Twitter. And the next thing you know, all hell has broken loose. And it's been like this for months because they have been shrieking like demons. But the shareholders said 98%, I found this out today as a matter of fact, 98% of them voted for Elon Musk to be allowed because he was a large, he bought a whole bunch of shares. And then all the other stockholders said yes, they voted yes. They wanted him, they wanted to take the company in a different direction because they, for whatever reason, ostensibly because of the mess it's been. And he bought the company. And he said from the moment that he was allowed to speak, once the entire merger and the purchase was in place, he took it from public to private. And then he said, watch out, here it comes. The next thing he did was he fired 75% of the employees. Turns out, and you know, everybody's like, oh, Twitter's going to die because all these employees were fired. Guess what? Turns out that they were all a bunch of slackers because Twitter's running just fine. Now, he also said as soon as he was allowed to legally that he was going to make public all of the internal communications about certain subjects on Twitter. And, you know, to find out, were people being shadow banned? Were conservative voices being stifled? A whole lot of stuff surrounding that and how that happens and when that happens. The other thing he said he was going to do, his number one priority was to get rid of child sexual abuse, child pornography, human trafficking off of the site. And he has done both of those things. He turned the information, the internal information going on through back and forth through with employees in the company over to a couple of three journalists so far, Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss, and Michael Schellenberger. All of them, none of them could be said to be left wing, although Matt Taibbi definitely leans left. He was a journalist for the Rolling Stones. They're a little more center left, I would call them.
Jimmy Dore left.
You would, okay. But here's the thing. They're reporting
that he's a regular guest on Jimmy Dore. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I totally believe you, but their reporting doesn't show it. They tell both sides of the story. And as a matter of fact, to the point that Barry Weiss was fired or actually left her job at the New York Times because all of the other staff on the New York Times said that she was doing too much both sides stuff in her articles. She got shouted out of the New York Times. So, and Michael Schellenberger, you know what? I don't know a dang thing about the guy, but he did one of the Twitter files. We've gotten 1, 2, and 3. And I'm going to talk a little bit about, back to my point about the CEOs of these companies have been called up to Capitol Hill and they said, no, we're not shadow banning. Well, it turns out that's because they called it something different. They called it visibility filtered. So if someone asked Jack Dorsey, were you shadow banning people? No. Well, the truth is that because they used a different word for it. It's called visibility filter. It's lib speak for shadow banning. So he gave himself some wiggle room. Yep. It's called visibility filtered. And there's other terms that they use in Twitter files 1, 2, and 3. So I'm going to get to them right now. Do you guys have any questions so far, though?
No.
Yes, I do. Okay. I do. I'm dying to ask this question. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the Smothers Brothers?
I do.
They got canceled for speaking out against the war. And I'm thinking about how far back this goes. They were even, they're even assassinating our public politicians for going against whatever the narrative was. We're a little more gentler and nicer now with this, but this has always kind of gone on, this type
it
of
has,
thing.
It has. Project Moffitt.
You know?
Yeah, it's gotten more vicious. And what you're going to find, Elizabeth, that Danielle is correct, that it is Project Mockingbird, that the media and these huge global corporations are only allowing you to hear things like what you're talking about with the Smothers Brothers. It's a full court press. You'll hear 1 million stories about how the Smothers Brothers are unpatriotic and blah, 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 but you won't hear the other side, all the other people going, yeah, we really don't like that war, okay? And if you do back then with the war, if you saw that we're always presented as communists or long-haired, drugged-out, bad people, and when someone
or Malcolm X. Look at Malcolm X.
Yeah,
he was taken out for being against the war.
How they do it. And as a matter of fact, what we'll find, and I don't really want to get ahead of myself, is that when he fired those 75% of the employees, turns out a good portion of them were FBI and CIA. And we have proof of that in the Twitter files.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
they
let's
have...
continue.
I'm ready. So, yes, I do remember the Smothers Brothers. And, yes, that probably was the first cancel culture, high-profile cancel. But Malcolm X was another one. There was actually a bunch of them that were silenced over the years. And, it's done in different kind of ways, but it's all done with media, amplifying certain things and silencing others. That's how it's done.
Project Mockingbird. Also look up the fact that the FBI admitted to killing Martin Luther King. But let's continue.
Yep. Got it. Okay. So on December 2nd, Elon Musk started keeping his promise, which is to show us what's been happening internally at this uber-large corporation that controls the message that the world hears, not just the United States. Twitter is worldwide. It says, so Matt Taibbi started off his thread by saying, what you're about to read is the first installment in a series based on thousands of internal documents obtained by sources at Twitter. The Twitter files tell an incredible story from inside one of the world's largest and most influential social media platforms. It is a Frankenstein tale of a human-built mechanism grown out of the control of its designers. So they're saying Jack Dorsey that Twitter got away from him. I believe it. Twitter, in its conception, was a brilliant tool for enabling instant mass communication, making a true real-time global conversation possible for the first time. It's true. Millions of people go on Twitter, and they get their news, and they get their narrative from them. In its early conception, Twitter more than lived up to its mission statement, giving people the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers. Obviously no longer true. As time progressed, however, the company was slowly forced to add those barriers, some for good reasons, right? Some of the first tools for controlling speech were designed to combat the likes of spam and financial fraudsters, okay, so people ripping people off. It was for a good reason. Slowly over time, Twitter staff and executives began to find more and more uses for these tools. Outsiders began petitioning the company to manipulate speech as well, first a little, then more often, then constantly. This is where the government starts to get its claws into Twitter. By 2020, requests from connected actors to delete tweets were routine. One executive would write to another, more to review from the Biden team. The reply would come back, handled. So here's a list of tweets that they took down. I don't like what this person said. Take it down. Is it true? Hate, okay, so there's terms of service say that it has to be violence or spam. Those are originally the two things that they were supposed to use those tools for. As it turned out, it turned into a monster. They were taking down, I don't like their hair kind of tweets. It says, celebrities and unknowns alike could be removed or reviewed at the behest of a political party. And this is the key. Social media can do whatever they want to. It's a private company, and that's what we kept hearing for years. Build your own Twitter if you don't like it, okay? But when government actors...
And that's bullshit. I just have to say that's bullshit because Twitter was publicly traded. So that...
I understand that. They can still do whatever they want to do. They can take... They could have... But for... And this is where they broke the law, where the government agents did, government actors, by government actors requesting it and them complying. That's where they stepped over the line. Because even as a publicly traded company, Danielle, Twitter can do whatever they want to do. They can boost shadow ban, visibility filter, they want to. But when government
argument I think you can make on that is that they do have a fiduciary responsibility to act in the best interest of the shareholders.
Yep.
So I mean, there could be an argument made that what they were doing was bad for business, essentially, which like that could be some kind of lawsuit, but that would be a tough one to push.
The only point that I was making was that at that point, it was not a private company. It was a publicly traded company. But right now, it is a private company. So just keep that in mind when you're mulling over this information.
Yes. And John's point is correct. They have a fiduciary duty to the shareholders to make money. That's what shareholders expect when they invest in it. Twitter has always made money. Okay, advertisers advertise, big corporations advertise on Twitter. And so the shareholders were pleased. Twitter stock shot through the roof and stayed up there, right? It was at $63 a share when Musk bought it. But yes, they're still allowed to do whatever they want to do, except when government intervenes. And they can actually still do it, but government cannot. So here we go. Both parties had access to these tools. For instance, in 2020, requests from both the Trump White House and the Biden campaign were received and honored. Okay. However, the system wasn't balanced. It was based on contacts because Twitter was and is overwhelmingly staffed by people of one political orientation. There were more channels, more ways to complain, open to the left than to the right. Okay, and they actually have contributions by party recipient of how they donated in political campaigns. The people that work at Twitter, it's overwhelmingly to Democrats, right? The resulting slant in content moderation decisions is visible in the documents you're about to read. And this is where it gets crazy, okay? This is the part where they absolutely interfered in the 2020 election. This is the Hunter Biden laptop story, okay? They, written by the New York Post, a legitimate newspaper that's been operating in New York for, you know, I think 80, 90 years.
I think it's the oldest publication.
Yeah. Yep. It's quite possible. Okay. I know it's been around for a long time. So not only was the FBI wiretapping, I guess that's Rudy Giuliani's phone, because he had the laptop. Okay, so that's another backstory. The laptop was left at a computer repair shop. The guy turned it over to the FBI because Hunter Biden never came and picked it up. The FBI's had the laptop the whole time. They've had it for 2.5 years and never, ever leaked it. And you know that they leak like a sieve. But unfortunately, the computer store guy, when he turned it over to the FBI, once he realized what was on it, it was filled with crimes. That's why he gave it to the FBI. They didn't do anything with it. Bill Barr, Christopher Wray, have had that laptop the whole time. He kept a copy. And when he realized that the FBI was going to bury the story and protect the Biden family, he turned it over to Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani was shopping it to journalists because we were in the middle of an election, and this absolutely could change the face of the election. It demonstrated very clearly that Joe Biden was a corrupt politician. There we have the receipts. And the New York Post printed the story. Biden secret emails. On October 14, 2020, the New York Post published Biden's secret email contents of Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop. Twitter took extraordinary steps to suppress the story, removing links and posting warnings that it may be unsafe. They even blocked its transmission via direct message. You weren't even allowed to send it to each other in DMs, much less post it on Twitter. And at first they said it was because it was unsafe. Then they said it was hacked material. The next thing they said was that it was Russian disinformation based on a letter signed by 51 of our intelligence agency's top brass. They protected this kid, or supposedly Hunter Biden, but really it was Joe Biden, because there's evidence that he was neck deep in selling influence to foreign governments. And obviously, if that information got out into the world or into the United States, it would have changed the course of the election. As a matter of fact, we have evidence of that as well. They blocked it, a tool hitherto reserved for extreme cases such as child pornography. White House spokeswoman Kayleigh McEnany, the White House spokesperson, was locked out of her account for tweeting about the story, prompting a furious letter from Trump campaign staffer Mike Hahn, who seemed at least pretend to care for the next 20 days, right? So government officials were locked out of their account for trying to share this story. So they stepped in it. Okay, so this led public policy.
Okay, hold on,
Carolyn
hold
Strong.
On.
Got it.
1 second.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry. I think it's really noteworthy to say that computer repair person probably did not turn that laptop over because of government trading secrets with China. You know, that I believe the big crime, my theory anyway, the big crime on Hunter Biden's laptop was child porn. Because it was turned over, last sentence you just said, right, about child porn.
Yeah.
What they're not talking about. They will talk about everything else, but, and I bet you they're going to even invent crimes to cover up that it is kid porn.
We were told by Rudy Giuliani that, yes, there was evidence of incest and child pornography on that laptop.
And look what they did to him.
They destroyed
him.
So the entire time they were monitoring his cell phone, the FBI. So they knew when he gave the story to the New York Post, and that's when they went into overdrive. The FBI went into overdrive and called all their buddies in the CIA, the NSA, the Department of Homeland Security, all of them, and they all jumped in and wrote this letter that this is obviously Russian disinformation. And within 10 hours, every single quote-unquote mainstream news media said it's Russian disinformation. 51 intelligence agencies, agents have signed this letter. They say they know for sure that it's Russian disinformation. And keeping in mind that the FBI had the laptop the whole time and knew it was real.
And who doesn't trust
so
the FBI?
I've got a whole folder on the FBI. Watch, wait and see. It gets even worse. Twitter executives were writing back and forth. One of them said, what the fuck? Several employees noted there was a tension between the comms policy teams, who had little or less control over moderation, and the safety and trust teams. Can we take a closer look here? They're trying to say, look, you can't do this, what you're doing, within the company, and they did it anyway. Strom's note returned the answer that the laptop story had been removed for violations of here. Now, this is where they changed the story. First, they said it was unsafe. Now it's hacked materials. So it's stolen from Hunter Biden. They're not saying that it's unsafe. They're saying that it was stolen from Hunter Biden, so therefore we can't use it. This is the same company that published Trump's tax returns that were hacked materials. So they're, first of all, they're liars and they're hypocrites. Okay, yeah. So moving forward, next is when it gets into the 51 intelligence agents that signed the letter. But guess who's right in the middle of it? This is skipping ahead, but I need you to know this, that I said there was a bunch of CIA and FBI employees working for Twitter in their quote-unquote trust and safety. One of the top lawyer protecting the company was a man named Jim Baker. Pop quiz. Does that name ring a bell? James Baker?
Yeah, he was
Jim Baker.
The defense secretary for Bush. Bush.
Another Jim Baker. Yes, you're right. But there was one even more that was high profile. Anybody want to take a shot?
Oh, me.
Go.
Okay.
Pictures.
Okay.
Letterhead.
Also, an FBI lawyer on the Russiagate, Spygate, whatever you want to call it, task force trying to take down Trump, gets information, and then goes directly to Twitter.
Yes. Imagine that. Well, I take that back. He went to ProPublica first for a little while, and then he went to Twitter, and he was the attorney general counsel, their lead attorney at Twitter. Interesting. So it says, so here we are, they're going back and forth and limiting the visibility of this, of related stories and this story. What should we do? Can we truthfully claim that this is part of policy? One Global Comms, Brandon Borman asked, to which former Deputy General Counsel Jim Baker again seems to advise staying the non-course because caution is warranted. This is an email directly from Jim Baker. Okay, we're a month before the 2020 presidential election, where Trump, like, he was going to win in a landslide. Okay, and keep that in mind, that I still think the 2020 election was stolen. And I get to say that on Twitter now, which is really cool. That's the other thing that's happened. The content moderators don't get to stop me from saying that anymore. It's very nice. I'm super excited about that. That was one of the first things that I posted. Trump won. Biden stole the election. Anyway, so here we go. So Jim Baker says, let's use caution. Okay, caution is warranted with this material, right? So we know what happened. Okay, they stifled the story, and it was done by FBI and CIA agents in our own government, protecting the Biden family, preventing the American people from being informed voters. It's ugly, it's unconstitutional, and very light and definitely illegal what they did. Stop. Say hi, Nala. Moving on to Twitter files.
Hi, Nala. I was going to say that earlier.
she's wooling me right now, okay? Because you know what? She's been stuck inside all day. It's been raining all day, so she's even more of a pest. Okay.
I've heard a squeaky toy earlier. I was going to say Nala. Hi, Nala.
Yeah. She's a good girl, but she's antsy. So Twitter Files Part 2, we were expecting it the very next day. Interesting. And everybody's like, hey, what's going on? You promised us the second installment would come the very next day. Well, throughout the day, we were getting reports that this information was being filtered through, and rightfully so, as John so rightfully pointed out, you know, you have to think of the interests of the company. They were running the information through their attorney general counsel before they released it. And it was being sort of stalled because the quote-unquote attorney general counsel, who we now know is Jim Baker with the FBI, ex-FBI agent. And when Barry Weiss found out who it was that was preventing her from doing her second installment, she obviously wrote to Elon Musk and said, are you aware who this guy is? He was fired that day and walked out of the building. Jim Baker was fired from Twitter because it turns out he was, as he was quote unquote, filtering through the information ostensibly to make sure that, you know, that they didn't break any legal rules, he was shadow banning it. Elon Musk fired him. And he was walked out of the building. Barry Weiss took up the Twitter Files Part 2. There was some drama. It was kind of interesting. A new Twitter Files investigation reveals that teams of Twitter employees build blacklists, prevent disfavored tweets from trending, and actively limit the visibility of entire accounts or even trending topics, all in secret without informing users. Twitter once had a mission to give everyone the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers. Along the way, barriers nevertheless were erected. Take, for example, and this is, you notice what she starts with, and this is important. Stanford's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who argued that that COVID lockdowns would harm children. Twitter secretly placed him on a trends blacklist, which prevented his tweets from trending. Professor of Stanford School of Medicine, MD, PhD, health policy, infectious diseases, COVID, health, freedom. That's what's on his LinkedIn profile. They banned him because his narrative would go against what Biden wanted people to hear. Or consider the popular right-wing talk show host Dan Bongino, who at one point was slapped with a search blacklist. Twitter set the account of conservative activist Charlie Kirk to do not amplify. That means that no one gets to read, unless you go and look for Charlie Kirk to see if he tweeted within the last hour. Same thing with Dan Bongino. Same thing with this doctor from Stanford. Unless you know what to look for and go and search for their tweets specifically, you will never see them.
Same thing with me on Facebook.
Same thing with me on Twitter back in the day. We'll get to that. Yes. We're all being visibility filtered because our narrative doesn't fit the narrative. So therefore, it's always as much about what they don't talk about and what they prevent you from hearing as it is what they say. Sometimes I think
Correct.
Even more.
So I'm not going to get too far into this, but the only thing I used Twitter for when I first got onto Twitter was child sex trafficking rings being broken up, pedophilia molestation cases being taken down by government agencies right after Trump got into office.
He did.
That was the only thing I put on Twitter. Most of my reach has been on Facebook, but Twitter, the only thing for Pedogate, those were where my Pedogate posts went. And all of my gosh, I want to say my first 30 posts on Twitter are now gone. They, you know, they never elevated it, and they're gone now. So, you know, that's what I'm, you know, interested in when it comes to the Twitter files. And
well,
I think we're going to get there next.
Yes, we are going there. But to, that's also being corrected, and that's in my presentation. And it's really cool. It's also really gross, which is typical when it comes to freaking pedos and groomers. She mentioned quite a few, but what she did finally explain to us is that this little shenanigan they pulled with shadow banning, it's not called shadow banning in Head of Legal Policy and Trust Vijaya Gotti and Kayvon Baipur, Head of Product, said, we do not shadow ban. They added, and we certainly don't shadow ban based on political viewpoints or ideology. They've been saying that for years. Well, we come to find out that they're correct. They don't do that. Think about visibility filtering as a way for us to suppress what people see to different levels. It's a very powerful tool, one senior Twitter employee told us. So they can say, we don't shadow ban. No, they visibility filter. They, what was it they did to Charlie Kirk? They do not amplify. They search blacklist, and they trend blacklist. Okay? So it's a bunch of word salad. But the truth is that they have been totally doing that for a very long time, even to the point of Libs of TikTok, which is another high-profile account that's been absolutely a shit show. This is an account that goes on TikTok and posts what people actually say in their own words, and it's weird shit, and it's usually your child's teacher, and has been the shrieking and howling at Libs of TikTok over posting what they say in their very own words, that it's not safe, they're making us unsafe, okay? One of the accounts that rose to this level of security, of scrutiny, was Libs of TikTok, an account that was on the trends blacklist and was designated as do not take action on user without consulting with SIP-PES. That means the highest level of on and on about why they did it, when they did it. Yoel Roth, who we're going to get to with your pedo-gate stuff, Danielle. The hypotheses underlying much of what we've implemented is that if exposure to misinformation directly causes harm, we should use remediations that reduce exposure and limiting the spread virality of a content is, and that's a good way, is a good way to do that. Okay. So they go back to this word, actually there's three words, misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. And they decide what that is. These little pinhead worms at Twitter have decided that, oh, this could hurt you, so we're going to protect you from it. That's how they have squared this with themselves, within the company, and all of it. It's because they decided that it could hurt someone. So, and they decided which things were hurtful and which things weren't, based on their own little, what I'm going to not cuss. There we go.
Opinions, beliefs. We must have all gone to school together because we've been run by these people. They did this.
They did this. Yes, they all.
I mean,
they went
it was
the
30-year-olds who decided this would happen.
Yes,
COVID
that's exactly
crap.
It. So Twitter Files Part 3 described how they took down my account. My account and Donald Trump and General Flynn and millions of accounts off at one time surrounding supposedly what happened on January 6th. And for some reason, it's his thread is not coming up, and I don't know why. I've searched for it 3 times, which is kind of weird that I'm not able to find it. And,
narrative filtering?
Uh-huh. Part 3?
Not shadow banning. I say that.
Yeah, they couldn't possibly do it. So I'm just going to sum it up for you guys because I'm going a little long-winded for it, and I apologize for that. This stuff really blesses me. It's in a Gateway Pundit article. Hold on. I can find it.
This is very interesting. Don't apologize.
Okay, so Rick, today I have to – so the Christmas party I just left, Rick, first name, you know, he was silent pretty much the whole time because he was trying to not – say all this stuff that we talk about every single week on this show, right? It's like, oh, I'm not going to say it, but they're satanic pedophiles. Oh, I'm not going to say it, but, you know, Twitter files. You know what I mean? Like, he just kept, oh, you know. He totally would be for this. He was talking about, I'm going to send you the Zero Hedge article. Have you ever heard of
Zero Hedge?
And we're like, yes. Yes, you know.
Yes,
oh,
I know who Zero Hedge is.
All right, I'm going to say it. Yeah. Have you ever heard of Zero Hedge? Like, just, yes, please call in, Rick. You know?
I hope he calls
in. It's exactly what, he's very much a closeted, you know, with Elizabeth's earlier, interaction with the 4 people, right? And 1 person was a liberal and the other 3 were not, but the whole conversation kind of led around liberal, right? That was, you know, everybody was trying to spare the liberal's feeling, but the 3 out of, you know, out of 4 were like, yeah, I voted.
They're so sensitive.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Delicate little flowers.
I'm going to start. So, again, I can't find Schellenberger's thread, but I have a lot of information about it. And here's what it was. And this is one of the emails. Okay, so here we go. Slack channels. We have to call them what they are. So they're internal communication. So you guys know what Microsoft Teams is, where at your company, everybody goes on Teams and they chat back and forth. Okay, well, at Twitter, they're called something called Slack channels. And it was January 7th, January 8th, these little worms, these little 30-somethings are emailing or Slack channeling back and forth between Jack Dorsey and all these people that are on these teams about taking Trump's account down. They know that what they're doing is wrong and they're trying to figure out how they can make it right. Okay? How they can get away with what they're trying to do, which is to take down the social media account on one of the largest social media platforms in the world of the sitting president of the United States. And Jack Dorsey's like, no, he's vacationing in like Fiji or somewhere down in the freaking islands, but they're howling at him. Look at what's happening. All this is crazy. You know, and throughout the emails or the Slack channel, they're saying they talk about how they've been trying to figure out how they could do it for 3 years.
Can you please provide the date of that?
The date of what?
The date of that Slack chat?
Here it is. Oh, gosh, it doesn't show the date this time. So Michael Schellenberger posts, it says around 2:30 p.m. on January 7th, excuse me, so there's the
date. What year?
2021, after the election, after January 6th. But throughout the emails, they're talking about how they've been trying to do this and ways to do it over the last 3 or 4 years since Trump became president. But this gives them the cover that they need. But Dorsey's saying no. Okay? Around 2:30 p.m., comms exec DM Roth, Yoel Roth, who was also fired, thank God, they DM'd Roth to say they don't want to make a big deal of the QAnon ban to the media because they fear if we push this, it looks like we're trying to offer up something in place of what the thing everyone wants, meaning a Trump ban. In addition to suspending Trump's account, Twitter execs decided to suspend thousands of accounts connected to Q. However, they wanted to keep it from becoming a media circus or making it appear as if they were offering the mass suspensions of Q accounts in exchange for the suspension of Trump. So it was their goal all along, keeping in mind that all these little worms had been infiltrated by our government, working at Twitter, plus full court press, to get them to behave in a certain way. Nathaniel and Yoel mentioned Q and misleading information, and our behavior was harmful. Are we ready? Foreign interference, disinformation, and the 2020 election. So they went to, this is months before the 2020 election, they went to a digital forensic research lab at the Atlantic Council in August of 2020 to engage with public and private sector leaders as they discuss what steps they've taken to secure the information space around the 2020 election, presidential election. The focus will be on measures to mitigate the threat of foreign interference, to combat disinformation campaigns, and to ensure that no American voter is misled when it comes to understanding when and how to cast a ballot. Particular attention will be paid to the dual challenge of coordinating between public and private institutions and communicating information threats to the American people in a clear, timely, and transparent way. So January 6th was bullshit. They already planned to do this. Here we have a list of
And that's
the
why
people.
They took down Dan Bongino. Spoiler alert,
yes.
But Dan Bongino, all of this in weeks leading up to the election, knew this was planned, knew this was coming, reported on it,
yep.
And that's the reason that it was taken down. Sorry. All right, go ahead.
So we have a Twitter thread from, let me see, who is this guy? I can't tell. Name redacted. That's his Twitter handle. Your new company, he's tweeting Elon Musk, has many ex-FBI /CIA agents in high ranks, should probably do a little house cleaning thread. Kevin Michelina, current Twitter senior corporate security analyst, ex-FBI intelligence analyst for 12 years. Next one is Doug Hunt, and it goes on and on and on. An entire
and
list.
Rick, I'm sorry to say, I know I keep interrupting, I'm sorry, but Rick, today, the guy I hung out with, old friend at the party, was like,
yeah.
He sent me this exact thread. He sent me this whole thread. And I'm like, all right. And so this at name redacted, right? That's the Twitter handle. Yes, you sent me that whole thing. And he's like, I'm just going to keep my head down. You know what I mean? So, like, I feel like there's so many more of these people out there that know this stuff, but please go on for the people who don't.
Okay. So now we get to the crux of the biscuit. I don't know if John and Elizabeth are bored by now, but there is a reason why
I'm not bored.
No.
I'm not bored, but it's just a lot, so I'm just listening.
I'm trying to take it in. So there is a reason. They know something's wrong.
So when they hear this, it's like, oh my God, yes. And I think that's why, like, Rick and my aunt, everybody, they're like, oh my God, this all makes sense.
Let me just tell you, this is the reason why I'm doing this. This is the reason why I think it's important, because it's all bullshit. There are millions of us that already know this stuff, that already know that something wrong, but because these people have their thumb on the scale of information that is in silos, information silos, they have tried, it's not working, to prevent us from getting this information. they've done everything they possibly could. So the other day I was all excited about this stuff, and I was like, Danielle, it's finally happening. She goes, yeah, we've heard that before. And I'm like, I know, I get it. I go, but no, but not this time, because this, okay, because it's actually, we're actually getting to hear stuff that they have tried, and I'm telling you, literally, they killed millions of people in order for this stuff to not get out. What do you think I mean by that?
Oh, me. Oh, me.
Go.
COVID.
Ding, 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 ding. You have guessed correctly. So when I realized that these people were willing to kill millions of people worldwide over a fucking election and do whatever it took to prevent people from getting life-saving medication once they released it on the world, I realized that they would stop at nothing, including, to Elizabeth's point, preventing people from finding out.
I have some comments on that. I don't want to stop your roll, you know, but whenever you're...
All right. We got this, buddy. Go.
Yeah. So I basically, and it's a little bit conspiratorial, maybe, but concerning the 2020 election, and I got to go back to 2012. When I was following Ron Paul, and then I was learning about libertarianism and the Federal Reserve and all of that kind of macroeconomic stuff, right? And what I found out back then in 2012 is that the U.S. government in 2023, next year, is facing an unfunded liability crisis where the government is on the hook for over $100 trillion that it, like, there's no, and we don't know how it's going to get paid, right? And I think it's possible because I watched the 2020 election on mainstream media, and it was so freaking bizarre, like watching those guys. Yep. And the thing is those news guys, they're not actors, and they were acting and badly, but that's what it was. It took me a while to realize it, but they knew.
Yes.
They knew what was going on, and they were acting like it was an election. But what I'm getting to is I think that the 2020 election, the reason it was so important and why the powers that be, whoever it is, you know, the deep state,
whatever
whoever it is, it was so important to get the 2020 election. I think maybe is because of what's coming in 2023 when we come to a point where we have over $100 trillion that the government owes. So either people aren't going to get paid, or they're going to print the money and crash the dollar like to even new depths than it's already at. And I think that situation is a major opportunity for people that have money and that have power. So I think that's why it was important for, let's say, the deep state maybe or whatever you want to call it, for them to be in power when that time comes. And I really think that's what the 2020 election was about. It was about having the right people in power when the opportunity comes around, when things kind of crumble.
Yes. And so here's the thing. So what their reason is, I would say it's that your, you know what, your insight is always laser correct. It always follow the dollars, always follow the money for sure. But I have long believed that, these people are satanic. That is what I believe, and I challenge you to correct me on that.
Another shout out to Rick.
Yes. So, just back to name redacted for a moment. There's a list that's stunning of the people that were or are still working for Twitter. And Name Redacted sent this to Elon Musk and all the people, Michael Schellenberger. He sent it to Barry Weiss. He sent it to Matt Taibbi. And he says, I just want you to make sure that you understand. He said, what do all of these Twitter employees have in common? They were all hired since Donald Trump was elected. Why, after Trump was elected, did Twitter hire over a dozen ex-FBI CIA agents and place them in senior management roles? how many Jim Bakers are embedded in Twitter, possibly working against you or watching you. I'd advise you to do some investigating and clean house. So,
no, this is
Noelle.
Interesting.
Little side note. Hold on. I call them Chad and Steve when I'm having a conversation that goes against the government narrative. I'm not even kidding. Ask people, my husband, friends, Chad, Steve, Chad, stop.
Yes.
Stop listening. We have a deal. Todd with two D's is there when Chad or Steve are on vacation.
Right.
You thief of joy.
Very careful.
You know, this reminds
right?
me. Absolutely. Oh, God. But
so the good news. So since it's
4:11,
I'm going to just cover the good news before I go, because my dog is driving me crazy.
Cool.
The Jen Psaki lost. She has to be deposed, and that's great news. So on the good news, let's see what else. Oh, God, Nala, you're driving me crazy, honey.
Oh, Walpy.
Hi, Nala.
So during this entire time, according to Barry Weiss, according to all of the Twitter files, the FBI was having weekly meetings with social media executives, telling them what to print and what not to print. So that's that was, you know, I had that in the good news report, but it's all big tech. The best piece of news this week is they did pass the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act, and in it was language that said military people are no longer have a vaccine mandate on them. And they also in that NDAA is that all of those military people will be offered their rank and pay back.
Yeah, I want to comment on that as well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because I was talking to a guy that I was in Iraq that I'm still friends with, and we talk all the time, and we kind of looked that up, and a lot of people don't realize that there are four different characterizations of discharge. So there's honorable, general, other than honorable, and dishonorable. And no one was dishonorably
right.
discharged over the vaccine. It was mostly, if you were honorably discharged, it was mostly general discharge, which is not exactly like you lose your GI Bill, but it's not like a black mark on your record, so to speak.
But you lose your GI Bill because you won't get a vaccine.
Right. No, I agree. I'm not saying it's okay. Like, I'm not saying that. But it was said that they were dishonorably discharged, and I wanted to kind of correct that because a dishonorable discharge is actually a felony on your record. You know, it's really, really bad. And it wasn't quite that. And just for the purpose of being kind of accurate, I just wanted to kind of throw that out there.
So if I said that, I want to make sure that I correct myself because I didn't mean to say that. They were discharged. I'm not even sure I qualified how they were discharged, but I'm glad you followed up with that. No, they were not dishonorably just discharged. They shouldn't have been discharged at all, which I'm sure all agree. Get down off this couch right now.
As a point of pride as a Marine, I'd like to point out that the majority of those who refused to take the vaccine were Marines. There were, I think, I can't remember the exact number, but it was like around 1,500, I think, to 1,800 Marines. And then the other branches of service were like around 100 or something. So hoorah to the Marines out there, you know,
hoorah.
Sticking up for,
that's right.
for what they believe
simplify,
in. So.
Simplify.
That's what they're fighting for.
So, yeah,
for.
Those Marines
that's
will probably
people,
be back.
Right. Well, okay, so that's what these people chose to lay down their, you know, these people are alive. But the fact that they know, you know, the sacrifice they make to their country is to lay down their lives to protect freedoms, and then a freedom is taken away from them, it's got to be a glitch. You know, it's got to be a glitch in the matrix for those people who, and I'm sorry to say, but though that service men and women, thank you all for your service. But if the Constitution is not being upheld, how are we up, you know, why are we contractually obligated, and I'm speaking about men and women of service, how are we contractually obligated to still support that system if your rights are being taken away? That's a legit question.
Well, I will tell you, Danielle, that signing up for the military is down like 50% because they're not going to – because when you start taking bodily autonomy away and then and we're hearing more and more about the injuries coming from these vaccines, it's just – so thank God they did this. I'm super happy. I'm going to close with Katie Hobbs. Katie Hobbs ostensibly won the governorship in Arizona. They certified the election. Carrie Lake's campaign promptly sued. So there's more to come on that. But guess who was had a direct line to the execs at Twitter and was making them take down to silence her critics on Twitter?
Me. Can I answer?
Go.
Katie Hobbs.
Good guess. Unreal. Katie Hobbs off his Twitter to have posts removed. So the Democrat candidate who ran the Arizona election censored her political opponents, disrupted election day votes, and then threatened counties with prosecution if they didn't declare her the winner, is contacting Twitter and having them take people down who were saying mean things about her because she was an awful candidate. And I hope she trips over her feet and I don't know, something bumps your head. I want to thank you for listening. It was my honor to do this today. I've been so excited about the information that has been coming out. I could tell you that I barely scratched the surface. I want to close with Yoel Roth, though. Yoel Roth was the chingon. Right, there was two people above him, Gotti and Parag, but Yoel Roth was right in there. And there's a lady on Twitter called Eliza Blue, and I was talking about her last week, Danielle, because she's a survivor of sex trafficking. And for years, she has been howling at Twitter execs to take down child pornography, child sexual abuse, off of Twitter, and she was getting nowhere. And she kept asking. They'd say, yeah, we're doing it, and they would do nothing. There were specific hashtags that pedos used. They wouldn't even take down the hashtags. So this week, last week, he fired Yoel Roth because he was going to keep him on, and then he found out that some stuff about him, and immediately walked him off the job. This guy is hot. I love him. I love Elon Musk. And then some stuff started coming up. You guys know who Christopher Rufo is?
No.
I can't.
Christopher Rufo was all over the nation exposing critical race theory being taught in schools and also inappropriate information to very young children about sexuality and gender, and he was just one of those people, and he got censored on Twitter. But he, as soon as he found out that Yoel Roth was in charge of the people that were in charge of taking down child porn and not doing it, he went looking for his dissertation from college, his PhD dissertation. And his PhD dissertation was, why can't minors go on Grindr? Why can't minors, young boys, go on Grindr?
Because they're dirty from all that coal that they're mining.
Right. Grindr is a homosexual dating website, and Yoel Roth was lamenting that young boys, children, weren't allowed to legally interact on Grindr. That was his PhD dissertation. Then they also found out that he was another one of his papers was about, can a child ever consent to have sex with their teacher? And Eliza Blue tweeted Elon Musk, and she said, I think we found the problem. And Elon Musk wrote her back and said, apparently. So then they went digging and come to find out that they hired this lady a year ago to in the trust and safety, and she went to Parag and Gotti and asked for staff for the section that went after child sexual abuse, and she was told no. They were deliberately leaving that stuff off up on purpose. So when we say that we believe that deep state is a bunch of satanic pedophiles, definitely weren't so crazy after all.
Oh, me.
So,
can I answer?
Go.
Me. How long have I been saying this?
I know. So here's the good news, which I always close with. Even though it felt pretty hopeless, why aren't they fixing it? When will it stop? How can we fix it? Why isn't anyone listening? Guess what? God was. I believe that we are on the precipice, that things are going to change in a mighty and powerful way.
Yeah, freedom. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that freedom in the United States, at least, and maybe it's because of the way that the nation was founded, it's such a strong drive for it here that I think we have these threats a lot of the time that we've been facing. But I think given time, freedom, at least here, wins out. And it takes time and it takes effort, obviously, but people put in that effort. And it's something that I don't worry about too much here, because there's such a drive for it and a desire for it here.
Yes, and it took a man from South Africa to send $44 billion. And you know what? Here's the thing. So all of this, you're right, has been going on under the surface. And because of this sort of tree falls in the forest business, Mockingbird Media, we've been saying this stuff and believing this stuff and pushing for this stuff the entire time, but it's been in information silos. But if you talk to anybody, they go, oh, yeah, I know. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it really exploded with Gamergate back in 2015.
I remember. That was one of those seminal moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happened was people just started going and speaking the truth in other venues in a location called Telegram, Truth Social, some on TikTok, right? There's not much content moderation on TikTok. Instagram, Google, all of those places, not so much. But we're going to find a way, because you're right, because we have a drive, we have a deep-seated belief that we are allowed to say and think and do what we want, what we believe, and that no one should have the power to silence us. So, yeah, I want you guys to have a great week. Does anybody have any questions or before I go? Because I'm going to go if you don't.
I've already kind of gone over everything that I had, but thank you for all the information. I knew a lot of what you were saying was true, but I didn't know the details. So it's definitely nice to get filled in on the details.
Right. Today we have the receipts, which is really cool. Yes.
Yeah.
And this was only Twitter
true.
Files 1 and 2. 3 and 4 should come
right.
next week. I don't think we even touched on 3 and 4.
Okay, so we did touch on 3, that Schellenberger, and he talked about what happened when they took Trump down and they took my account down. That's 3. I just couldn't find it. They're stifling it, but guess what Twitter 4 is going to be? You ready? Pop quiz. Who do you think, what do you think Twitter 4 is going to be?
Oh, me.
So,
Pedogate.
Wrong.
Ooh,
this morning,
that's
you,
good too.
This, yeah.
Oh,
this morning, Elon Musk tweeted, my pronouns are prosecute Fauci.
I love him.
That's a good one. I love Elon Musk. Yeah, he's great.
So next week, I hope to have just as much fun, exciting information about how they silenced us during COVID, right? And which means the election. Back to they did everything that they did to get rid of Donald Trump. Why? Why was he such a threat? I want you to ponder that over the next week.
Because he's not a globalist.
And I mean, I just gave my answer.
And think NATO.
Okay, you're right, Danielle. So yes, Danielle, you were because he wanted to save the children. Yes.
I'm just
that's
saying.
Why.
And I've been saying for a long time, and Twitter's been censoring me for a long time.
Okay. Have a wonderful week. God is still sitting on his throne as he continues to show himself to me in a powerful way. I hope he's doing the same for you.
God bless you, honey.
Love
good
you.
Luck on,
God bless you.
Good luck on your
Bye.
Water heater.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Let's do, we've got plenty of time. Do some comments on this. I would like to start with the fact that the NDAA is bullshit to begin with. You know, it's like, oh, yay, the vaccine's out of the NDAA. Well, the NDAA takes away constitutional rights, which I'm not really a big fan of. That's what I would like to say about that. But let's talk about Twitter files for a few minutes. And then I have a Jimmy Dore, a 13-minute Jimmy Dore to play. About
oh how odd.
I know, right?
I know.
Who would have
thought? Look at him. Where'd you find Jimmy Dore? That Jimmy Dore. Teasing. Now tell me, for the old woman, what's in the and what is what? Explain all those letters. Who? What department is that?
That is the NDAA, is the National Defense Authorization Act, I believe, that basically
oh, gotcha.
Rids us of our rights to a lot of
the
shit.
Any organization that's like three or four letters is worthless and should be ended, in my opinion. I don't think any of them
it's
are worth
It's worse than
funding.
Worthless. Detrimental.
Right.
NDAA
sure.
takes,
yeah, absolutely.
Just, you know, takes away from our constitutional rights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got along fine without the alphabet soup for, 150 years or whatever it was. Like, let's just do that again.
Well,
I mean,
I totally
FBI,
CIA.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
IRS, get rid of it.
Yes.
What would the population do? They'd have no one to look up to and look to for guidance. They'd train them to have these things. They can't do anything for themselves.
Right, and that's a big problem.
That's the problem right there.
Population is trained to believe these things are good,
mm-hmm.
you know. But that's another
mm-hmm.
reason that we have the show, is that we're trying to you know, remind people. People need to remember that we have inalienable
mm-hmm.
rights.
But all it would take is a president. Like the president at any time could fire every single person in the alphabet soup because they all fall under executive authority. Determine the funding.
Well, then that
but
would mean
the president alone can fire everyone.
Well, doesn't that mean that Trump failed?
What was going to happen at one time in Canada?
You could say that.
And it didn't go very well.
You could say that. It's not politically expedient. It's kind of political suicide, but it would be really good. It would be a lot of chaos. And I think people fear the chaos, you know.
People fear. Okay. I'm really sick of entertaining people's fears at this point. We just went through the last 3 years of entertaining people's delusions and fears. You know, honestly, at this point, like... Mm-hmm. Okay, so if the government shuts down now, if the local government even shuts down now, let's just say local government and federal government shut down right now, does that mean that people who operate traffic lights won't go into work the training that they have? I mean, people
right.
are all,
no.
oh, it's all about fear, but... I'm telling you that basic operations at this point in history still rely on humans to show up. And I think that
true.
People are
that's true.
Like, you know,
I think what people either don't get or understand or are afraid of is that, like, if there's something that people want to get done, like traffic lights, people want to have traffic lights, then it'll get done. If there's a supply and there's a demand, it'll move. So, people want to have traffic lights and be able to drive safely, and then there's people that know how to do it. So you have people with money that want the thing and people that have the skill that want the money. You know, it's going to happen one way or another. I can't tell you how, but it'll happen. Where there's a supply and a demand, it'll happen.
I'll tell you how.
True.
But
here's the point, though, is that has nothing to do with the government. The government collapses, then you know how much money we owe other governments? Immediately, if we went into bankruptcy, if we stopped, it shut down because, wow, we don't have any money and we don't bump up that debt ceiling. I think we're bought and sold by China. We would be insolvent and they'd immediately be like a hostile takeover of this government.
No,
that's my theory on why they keep becoming because it involves much more than government
services. I don't think that's
services.
Feasible, though.
We're a bank. We're the bank of the USA, basically. We're a corporation, right? A corporation that operates
in the military.
Under bankrupt the whole government. It's what do they call it? Network cryptocracy. Help me out, Daniel.
Oligarchy.
It's, oligarchy. There you go. We are more of a bank than a government, and we are operating in debt, in such debt that there is this looming reality of what would happen if the government shut down, meaning if we shut down the big government bank, if the Fed closed everything, oh my God, that's the same thing is what would happen. And it has nothing to do with streets of
transportation
or anybody's paycheck in the government.
I said that's the fear. You know, that's the, you know, the
well, that's
the anxiety of shutting down our – well, are you sure?
The reality is, I think, is that what Danielle's saying
the country
is that it wouldn't be that bad.
I don't think it would be that bad. I think
the
anxiety of this pending, looming, you know, collapse is really keeping people enslaved.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares, not even Congress. None of these people would care. It's more the fact of if we default our loans, big, bad changes, just like Twitter. Elon Musk bought Twitter. Oh, my God, we're all fired. That's the same fucking thing that's going to happen with this country. If we default in our – do you know the extent of our loans? Or not our loans, but our debt, our credit.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. But that's – a lot of that is just the Federal Reserve, because the way that the Federal Reserve notes, the U.S. dollar is – you'll see it on your dollars. It'll say Federal Reserve note. The way it works is the money is borrowed into existence. So every dollar that exists, essentially we owe interest on. So it's not possible to pay the debt because we owe more than, and I don't mean individuals necessarily, but we owe more than the number of dollars that are in existence. So it's not possible to pay back.
Right, so to me that screams. Hold on, to me that screams that this is a fucking sham, right? We can say that the Pentagon lost $21 trillion and that our national debt is this much and is that much, you know, this is an illusion. Our money is an illusion, and the only thing the Federal Reserve is an illusion. And the only thing that backs
it, people cannot know this,
is the public perception. So if we just turned our back on the whole system, what military? They all just got fired for not being vaccinated. You know what I mean?
Well, no, but that's what the Iraq War was about.
Yes. That was what the Iraq War was about. And honestly, I don't know how Elizabeth feels about this. But, I mean, what do you think about 9/11? Don't you think that that right there was, you know, that was the start of the Iraq War, right?
That was the end of the fucking world. Do you remember? No, you don't, because you're not old enough. We didn't have chemtrails before 9/11. I remember when my skies changed. And they didn't even have trails. It was like this weird black kind of metal. I was like, what the fuck's going on? The sun doesn't feel the right way. The sky doesn't look the same. It took about 5 years for them to have the balls to try to do this. And then they started creeping in this fucking spray shit. And now it's like a spider web, and they don't even care. But
the NDAA was the continuation of all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, yes. When they did away with your Constitution and the Patriot Act, and I was just talking to my aunt about this. I said, this is where my head exploded, because I said, you know what? We do not need to comply anymore. That's how we get out of this. And I said, look, if we had said, hey, fuck this shit, when they blew the buildings up and decided to treat you like a bunch of fucking thieves and cattle when you wanted to fly an airplane, I said, I can't believe that anybody fucking will do that. I went once, twice, and I'm like, I will not ever fucking do this again. And it's just like going to Sam's Club or the big box stores where you have to walk like, you know, and be checked in and checked out and take this off. And I'm like, no, if we had said no and shut down the fucking airlines for a couple months, they'd find a different way to make us all safe than to treat us like a bunch of fucking animals. And it's the same. But she goes, oh, no, we have to save. So nobody has a problem with being treated that way. And I said, you know, what about now the next step is we're going to be treated like, you know, the leper from Stalag 14 with the star and the vaccine pass. And, you know, is it for, you know, no, this is when we say no, we don't, our money stops. But we didn't. We let all this patriotic bullshit and the fear and trauma of look what they did to the buildings, and we gave our whole country away, and in the meantime they put us to sleep with drugs and craziness, and it wasn't what it took 20 years before they decided to try this. I heard they tried to do this before with the masks and the whole, you know, living in fear over a cold or alien invasion or something to see how well they can control us. And this was an NPR story from years back. But, wow, we wouldn't have done it. But look how, you know, this was a test run. Boom. It worked beautifully, beautifully. But, no, it has not been the same. The media has not been the same. The news stories turned into one talking head with the same narrative from Iraq. And I believe Iraq was before 9/11, yes or no?
Right.
No, it was
and
after. Kuwait was before
9/11. Before the polls. Yeah, so Iraq was before. But I'm talking the Gulf War. The one with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the late 80s, early 90s,
yeah.
As I recall.
But that's when the district changed. And then it was a matter of time before just everything.
We're going to have more than an hour left to talk about this, but let me just finish up with this last Jimmy Dore clip about shit libs freaking out about how the Twitter files is a nothing burger. So it's a pretty quick video, but here we go. 3, 2, 1.
They can't take it. The Twitter files, the shit libs on Twitter cannot take it. The establishment Democrats cannot take it. And so they're doing two things. They're trying to pretend it's not a big deal, that we found out that Twitter's in bed with the intelligence community, the government, political parties to censor people and break their own rules and then lie about it. They're trying to pretend like that's not a big deal. And they're also trying to, he says, conservatives, the reach of our tweets is being limited by a progressive Twitter workforce. Democrats say that's an insane conspiracy theory. Barry Weiss, here are the documents proving this. Democrats, everyone knew this already. It's all together now. It's a nothing burger. So that's what they're saying. That's the new thing. We already knew this. We knew that that's how that we knew that they were moderating content. We want them to.
Oh, that's what it was. It don't seem moderate with how they moderated it, do they? Death of expertise moment. Yes, it is, Tom Nichols.
So here's how they say it. Barry Weiss is literally in the middle of a breathless Twitter files thread describing Twitter implementing the exact policy that Elon Musk said he was going to institute 3 weeks ago. That's not big deal.
Wait, did you see what that guy just said before? It's not on this one. What's his name? Tom Nichols. Looked at new Twitter policy is freedom of speech, but not freedom of reach. That's the only thing dumber than nothing, Burger. But he said it's the death of expertise. Oh, yeah. You see that?
Where is
the
this?
Big reveal
where are you
Twitter
reading? Okay.
Yeah, that.
Is a classic death of expertise moment. People who didn't know about something until now assume not knowing about it means that it was a huge secret.
That's the literal definition of a huge secret.
It was.
A bunch of people didn't know about it, and you think that's a huge secret. What do you think a secret is, Tom Nichols? What an idiot.
But he's acting like... because I don't know how nuclear fusion works,
it's
a secret. No. That's not a secret.
Oh, is that what he's trying to say?
That's what he's trying to say, because you didn't know about it. No, people, and he's saying that just because you didn't know about it didn't mean you couldn't find out about it. Yes, mm-hmm. We couldn't find out about it, Tom. That's why we have to do Twitter files. Nobody knew about this, Tom.
Yeah, I'd like more of these death of expertise moments, where I'd like to piss on its grave.
And that's another one. So that's the thing they're trying to pretend like no. So this is my favorite. This is someone named Ashley Feinberg. She said so. When Barry Weiss tweeted this out, she says a new Twitter files investigation reveals that teams of Twitter employees built blacklists, prevented disfavored tweets from trending, and actively limit the visibility of entire accounts or even trending topics, all in secret without informing users. She says this has literally been on Twitter's help page since 2018. She's pretending that this explains this, and I'll read this to you. She says this is the Twitter on Twitter's website about their policy. Abusive and spammy behavior. When abuse or manipulation of our service is reported and detected, we may take action to limit the reach of a person's tweets. She's pretending this is shit. This is not. Those are not. So they're pretending. We already
said we may take action. That might be burning down a house or whatever. We said we may. That's just.
So they're but the people that they banned weren't doing abusive or spammy behavior, like Dr. Bhattacharya, which we showed you, the guy from Stanford, the guy leading in his field, who just wanted to tell people that COVID lockdowns were going to harm children. They banned him.
Well, Jimmy, online abuse and spammy experts disagree with you.
Yeah.
Many experts say that it is abusive.
So this is a lie. So this is someone named Ashley Feinberg, and she's just lying, right, because she's a partisan hack, and she doesn't have the ability to tell the truth unless it lines up with her partisan view. This is what's called gaslighting and lying. This isn't true. This is all new information to us for them to show us how they were shadow banning people. And depressing their results, they were black shadow, and there was several different ways to do it. We didn't know any of this.
I just want to say, we all owe Scientology an apology because they have very moderate responses to things compared to these scumbags and more reasonable views.
Here's what David Sachs says: new narrative. They weren't shadow banning political opponents. They were just enforcing the spam policy. That's what they're really trying to say. That's what Ashley Feinberg is really trying to make you believe. Would you ever believe anything Ashley Feinberg ever tells you again in your fucking life?
Oh, I don't do my own research, so I wouldn't know about it.
this person says, hey, could you please point out how this Stanford professor was being abusive or manipulative? Because we showed you Dr. Bhattacharya got banned from Twitter, and he asked, well, where was that doctor from Stanford being abusive or manipulative? And, of course, she didn't return. She answered everybody's questions in the thread except this guy.
Oh, well, we define what abuse and manipulation is, obviously, sir. Why would you even ask a stupid question?
Glenn Greenwald wraps it up. He says, not comparing the stories, but I watched Obama supporters do the same thing with the NSA story. In 2009 to 2013, me and others said the NSA is mass spying on Americans. The Democrats said that's an insane conspiracy theory. Then the Snowden docs proved that it was real. And then the Dem says, duh, everybody knew this. It's a nothing burger, that they're doing an exact same playbook.
That's what, I mean, I don't remember if I thought exactly that, but I definitely had an attitude of like, you're kind of a jerk for revealing it. South Park did where Cartman is the Snowden. It's like, yeah, they were doing something bad, but it sucks that he went in there to try to expose. It's such a don't go against the church just because there's a few molestations mentality, and they could just program it. It's just throughout society, like, be loyal to the group.
Are you saying even South Park got it wrong?
Yeah.
Oh. So here's another thing. The thing to understand about the Hunter Biden laptop story was that it was supposed to be the Trump campaign's October surprise. Mainstream media and social media were supposed to take the bait and focus on the appearance of a scandal for the last weeks of the election. There is a scandal.
Parody account.
So this is what we're talking about. This is the bullshit. And then he goes, they didn't take the bait, meaning the media companies. The New York Post story was shunned. Social media platforms treated as manufactured propaganda with questionable sourcing, which was wrong. It wasn't propaganda, and the sourcing wasn't questionable.
And now they admit it, by the way.
And now they all admit it.
And conservative elites have been pissed ever since. How do they feel now that it turned out to be entirely true and it's proven?
Musk and Taibbi are tapping into that well of resentment.
Good.
That's good, right?
I'd like someone to do that.
What's wrong with that?
That's just, oh my God.
Why should we care about the president's adult failed son who doesn't work in the administration? The reason why we should care is because it revealed possible corruption between him and his father, Ukraine, Russia, and China. That's why we should care.
He gives half his income to his dad, as he states in the emails for some reason.
10% to the big guy.
Yeah. No. His complaint to his sister, like, you don't have to give half everything you make to dad, Ashley. He's like, you don't know what it's like.
Oh, really?
There's so many things in there to look at. Yeah.
The media didn't take the bait. No fair. That's the scandal. So this is what people are saying. It's just nuts. Here, he's got one more. He says they're going to keep bitching about it for years. It's going to be louder and emptier than the Benghazi hearings. The scandal is that their clever propaganda efforts sank like a lead balloon, and that has to be someone else's fault. That's it. That's the whole thing. Well, first of all, if they've done surveys now, and they know that if that story would have actually gotten out and people knew it was true, which it is, it would have depressed Joe Biden's electoral votes 16%. So he probably would have lost the election. So now social media suppressing that story is now fucking with the election. Go ahead.
This is my Dave Carr parody account, you're a piece of shit. Who cares if media took the bait? I don't care what they choose.
What
I care about is somebody tried to force people that did want to report it not to be allowed
not
to talk
to be allowed
about
to
it.
Report it.
Who gives a shit? The media, nobody cares about that. You suppress the people that did want to do it.
I don't need you to pre-read a story for me to make sure it's okay for me to read. I could just read it, I can decide. You don't have a superpower. And by the way, if that story is so bad that it's going to affect me in a negative way, which is why you have to stop me from reading it, that means that's why you suppress it and you censor it, because if I read it, it'll affect me negatively. Well, the person who did read it at Twitter, how come it didn't affect them negatively? What superpower do they have to be able to read this kind of stuff and not have it affect them? Aren't I just as strong as the person?
No.
I'm pretty strong. I've never felt more masculine in my life than I was playing a video of that Yol guy.
No, it's because you're a deplorable peasant, Jimmy, like most of America, and they can't be told those things, the little people.
So this has 15,000 likes, by the way.
He ended it with Finn in parentheses. Like, that's
like
his
Finney? Like, yeah. I just want to let you know, this has 15,000 likes. So people are, this is the sentiment of the Democrats in the country. Michael Tracy says, the Nothing Burger crowd must have missed this one. Jim Baker had previously been at the heart of Russiagate chicanery as general counsel of the FBI. Then, serendipitously, he was hired at Twitter and is right at the heart of their internal process of Russia-related censorship. So the guy who was caught making up bullshit Russiagate stuff is now over at Twitter in charge of censoring Russiagate stuff. That's a huge scandal. This is a huge scandal. Molly Jung Fest. So if you ever want to know what's not right, go to her. If you want a bad take, you go to Molly Jung Fest. She she grew up privileged, never had to do a fucking thing on her own, and everything she thinks is wrong. And here's another example of it. She says, I'm going to dinner now. Let me know what they find in Geraldo's safe.
It was, first of all, Capone safe, you moron.
Yeah, it was Capone safe.
Get that right.
It was Capone safe. And they're so that's more of this, trying to pretend like this is nothing.
Okay, how do you be that smug and cock that up that bad that you forgot who safe Geraldo went into?
So this is what this is called. This is called defending the establishment, which she is a perfectly centered in. She is the establishment. Molly Jung Fast is the. She is going to speak for them. She is in their class. She's been rich her whole fucking life in that class of people. She's never had to. She never had to knock on a door by herself. She had every door open for her in her life, and she's there to protect. She's a. She's not an attack dog of the establishment. She's a watchdog. She's a guard dog for the establishment. And so when someone like Matt Taibbi actually breaks a story that reveals corruption inside the establishment, she's there to defend them. That's what this is.
And how much you want to bet she's another one of these like Ben Collins people that can't, nobody knows their background until, you
no,
know.
I know her background. What is her it? Mother was a famous writer. And so she's born a silver spoon in her mouth. And
what is
go it? Look her up.
Yeah. Jong Fat. What's her name?
Molly Jong.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I used to wonder about. Like,
I have little. So this person says, I have little patience for anyone who says, oh, this is a nothing burger. Twitter's top executives lied. They lied to their users. They lied to Congress. And it's now a proven certainty Twitter acted on requests from political actors to suppress speech. This is a big deal.
Molly Jongfast is a contributing editor for The Daily Beast, an author of three books.
None of them good.
The first one is called I Must Be Really Stupid.
So there you go. So I don't need to read any more. There you go. There's your shit libs having a meltdown over actual scandal. Trying to pretend it's not real.
Sounds like a Catholic church. Oh, we barely molested you.
Oh, we barely. Hey, we're doing live stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, December 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 30th. And we're going to be in Tempe, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Nashville. Go to jimmydore.com for a link for all those tickets. See you there.
Okay. that's the progressive take on it, the real progressives. That's what, and that, I'm not talking about the organization, the real progressives. I'm talking about actual progressives. Follow yeah. their, you know, what they say. That's mm-hmm. kind of our take on it. And I feel like we're so close to the middle that at this point there are extremists, and all of the extremists are the ones that are the science deniers and the you know, big tech censorship deniers and the pedogate deniers. You know, there's not many people left who believe in this lie anymore. And I'm, and for one, you know, I'm very grateful for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was,
are you swimming or driving? We lost her.
Oh.
Bet she's driving. We might have dropped her car.
Me? I'm kidding. So, no, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm here.
Okay.
I was just letting you guys fill in. Like, I've already made my point on this. So why don't we start with John?
I think we kind of talked it over quite a bit already. Mainly the idea is that the left is taking this thing that's a real problem with the laptop, trying to turn it into, say it's just some kind of propaganda and it's false and whatever, and trying to dismiss it, which, you know, that's been happening for a while now, and it's kind of sad. And I think the tables are turning on that, though. So I don't think going forward they're going to be able to really do that, because I think the media has spent so much of their credit, so to speak, their sort of a trust credit on just throwing themselves up against Donald Trump for those 4 years, that I think there's very little faith in mainstream media to be had anymore. Like even my dad, who's like 70 now, or no, I think he's almost 80 now, something like that. Like he even is at a point where I don't think he really knows what to believe anymore with the media, which, you know, somebody that, you know, that's on in years has been watching mainstream media all their lives, and that's where he gets all his news. He doesn't even know what to believe anymore. That's a pretty strong indicator. And I think a lot of people are on that road now. So it's overall good news. But again, I think the reason that they don't care that much now about the laptop coming out and everything being verified now and all that, I don't think anybody cares now because it already served its purpose. They got their guy in. They got the globalist people in. The nationalist Trump, and whether you like Trump or not, he was a nationalist, United States, you know, American nationalist, and he's out there. And if it's true that it's about having power when the economic sort of shit hits the fan, if that happens next year, if that's what it's about, then they got what they wanted. They don't really care that much about what happens at this point because they're in power. But I hope I'm wrong about that. I mean, I've definitely been wrong about things like that before, and hopefully I am now.
If it was just the laptop, let me just hold on. Let me just interrupt real quick. If it was just about the laptop, it would be one thing. But I think I've told you that I've personally witnessed a toddler rape video on Twitter, on a public Twitter account.
Oh, yeah, that's disgusting.
Well, that's
the
tip of the iceberg. And that's honestly these Twitter file releases, it's going to show you. And it's already been proven with the releases that have happened that the quote-unquote trust and safety team let child pornography stay up. They were okay with it, you know. And to me, like, that is internal Twitter documents saying that this was okay. This was a culture that could grow and be cultivated on this platform, and they've got evidence that people came in and tried to stop it, and they let it go. One of the people that kept letting it go was John Podesta's niece. She's one of the
I didn't know about
this week. Yeah, this is the inner. It's like rings within rings within rings. What are they protecting?
Mm-hmm.
Pedogate. Pedogate is the colonial secret, and that, at the end of the day, in my opinion, is going to be what the Twitter files lead to, that Pedogate is real, and any evidence of it was suppressed by Twitter as this multinational corporation. You know, that's why it's so, you know, I look at, you know, I share and grab the popcorn when I see the Elon Musk tweets about how Twitter is a social media platform and a crime scene. That's the owner of the company and not a publicly traded company at this point. Remember, that's what the shitlibs kept saying, is that this is a public company and they can, or a private company, and we can do whatever we want. As a matter of fact, it was not a private company at that point. It was a publicly traded company. But what Elon Musk did when he purchased it is indeed make it a private company, took it off the stock exchange, did all of these things to make sure that the information that was going to be sent out there, put out there, was in fact legal to do. And he's doing it right now. So say what you will about the man, but he is absolutely releasing, basically like showing where all the bodies are buried, you know, and all of the people who were internal that were the Jim Bakers and Podesta's niece and all of these people who are just so well-positioned to cover up this colonial secret. I think at the end of the day, that is what that's what's going on. That's what Elon Musk is uncovering. Whatever else he does with it, whether, you know, if he uses it to be famous and push Neuralink, blah, 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 I don't care as long as people understand that Pedogate is real and it is the colonial secret that they're trying to hide.
Mm-hmm. And you can even connect it to all of this bad management. Why would they be so fiscally irresponsible? This goes back to, like, you know, Bush W. and Obama both had to sign these huge, incredible bailouts because we were just flat fucking broke. And every time it happened, behind the scenes, China came in, and I think they own all of Manhattan. That was made public. But behind the scenes, I bet they own pretty much all this fucking country, and we just simply don't know it. And in every bad deal they made, sign on the dotted line, I wonder what the disclaimer might be. If this government defaulted, I bet, I'm sorry, but this is now a province of Beijing, you know, but just by default of defaulting on it. And the way that they got them to do these things would be through blacklist honeypot.
Yeah.
I mean, that has been going on for decades and decades. And it's gone from, you know, the brownstone scandals, which he had Mike Pence and all. Barney Frank.
Yeah, the property.
There's always a scandal, a sex scandal of sorts behind the scenes with all these politicians that rise up through the ranks. And if you look at the flight log of Epstein Island, I mean, you've got Clinton, Obama, you know, I'm sure there's many other people in power that go right along with this, not because they believe in it, but because perhaps they got, what's the word I'm looking for, caught up in a bad situation that, oh, You filmed this? Oh, dear God. And it's just, it is such a vile cancer.
You can call it Pedogate. They got caught up in Pedogate.
Yeah. And this is not a new thing. They just give it a different name every decade as it comes out.
Correct.
But I think that this has been just a form of high finance blackmail that's been mixed up with politics for decades.
And Satanism. Let's just be real. Like, that's all
yeah,
of this, you know.
And it first leaked out as satanic child sacrifice. And that was on Phil Donahue and Oprah back in the 80s.
Yes.
When it first leaked out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think when you've got people that have given in to this sort of evil of pedophilia, I think that people like that are attracted to these positions of power because they can get away with it. And they have, right, for years now, in a position of power, in a way that you can't really if you're just a regular person. And I think that a lot of people that want to get into these powerful positions is probably linked to things like that, like these awful, evil things that they've let take themselves over. It's kind of like a demonic possession in a way, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But when they give in to that, it's like it's a lot harder to get away with doing evil things like that when you're just regular Joe Blow. But when you're in a position of power, like people cover for you, you know, you've got the FBI and everybody else that, you know, like we're seeing right now with the laptop and everything. So it's definitely something where when you think it through, it seems like it kind of makes sense that evil people would sort of congregate into positions of power because of the drive that they have to commit these acts. And the availability of doing that once they get into the position of power. So
yeah.
And that's one solution.
What's the old thing? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think power allows people to be corrupt. It more gives you the opportunity.
Let me play a short clip. It's like a four-minute, you know, audio of Oprah back in the, gosh, I think the early 90s, maybe late 80s. And this is Oprah. Yeah, hold on. It's like a four-minute clip. So 3, 2, 1.
My next guest was used also in worshiping the devil, participated in human sacrifice rituals and cannibalism. She says her family has been involved in rituals for generations. She is currently in extensive therapy, suffers from multiple personality disorder, meaning she's blocked out many of the terrifying and painful memories of her childhood. Meet Rachel, who is also in disguise to protect her identity. You come from generations of ritualistic abuse?
Yes, my family has an extensive family tree, and they keep track of who's been involved and who hasn't been involved. And it's gone back to, like, 1700.
And so you were...
Right, I was born into a family that believes in this.
And this is does everyone else think it's a nice Jewish family? From the outside, you appear to be a nice Jewish girl.
Definitely.
And you all are worshiping the devil inside the home?
Right. There's other Jewish families across the country. It's not just my own family.
Really? And so who knows about it? Lots of people now.
I talked to a police detective in the Chicago area, and several of my friends know, and I've spoke publicly before. And
so when you were brought up in this kind of evilness, did you just think it was normal?
I've blocked out a lot of the memories I had because of my multiple personality disorder. But, yes, I mean, it's like if you grow up with something, you think it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought...
So what kinds of things? You don't have to give us the gory details, but what kinds of things went on in the family?
Well, there would be rituals in which babies would be sacrificed, and you would have to, you know...
Who's babies?
There were people who bred babies in our family. No one would know about it. A lot of people were overweight, so you couldn't tell if they were pregnant or not, or they would supposedly go away for a while and then come back. The other thing I want to point out, not all Jewish people sacrifice babies. I mean,
no.
That's not a very
we kind of know
thing.
That.
I just want to point that out.
This is the first time I heard of any Jewish people sacrificing babies. But anyway, so you witnessed the sacrifice.
Right. When I was very young, I was forced to participate in that, in which I had to sacrifice an infant.
And the purpose of sacrifice is to what? Is to bring you what? What are you sacrificing for?
For power.
Uh-huh. Power. And so were you ever used yourself?
I was molested. I was raped several times.
Mm-hmm. What's your mother doing? In all of this. What's her role in all of this?
I'm not exactly what her role is. I haven't, you know, recovered all of my memories, but her family was extremely involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she brought me to it. Mm-hmm. Both of my parents brought me to it.
And where is she now?
She lives in the Chicago metropolitan area. She's on the Human Relations Commission of the town that she lives in, and she's an upstanding citizen. Nobody would suspect her.
Were you raised with a sense of right and wrong, Rachel?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I had both. I mean, to the outside world, everything we did was proper and right, and then there were the nights that things changed, that things just got turned around. What was wrong was right, and what was right was wrong. That's what helps to create somebody, to develop MPD.
Mm-hmm. Multiple personality.
Right.
Now, in your family, did you all call it worshiping the devil?
No. I don't know.
It was just evil, things you did.
Right. Well, I said it was evil, and they said it was good. There's a book that I had just come across called Lilith's Cave, which is a book of Jewish mysticism and supernatural. And there's a lot in that book that relates to what I, you know, endured when I was a child.
Okay, that was a whole lot in that 4-minute clip. But at the end of the day, that's what's going on, is this is for power. And, you know, that's the ultimate struggle right now, is the power over people. And so what goes hand in hand with that is the colonial secret. And that has to do with sacrifice and has to do with child abuse. And, you know, the sooner that we get people to that reality, you know, the sooner that we'll break this spell. And that's really my main objective at this point, is to get people to wake up to what's actually going on, because we are, you know, all under a spell, so to speak. Some are farther along in the healing process to get away from or awake from this spell. But, you know, the one thing that's going to be the most of us, that's going to unite the most of us, is that the pillars of our society are raping children and sacrificing children, and they need that to continue in order for them to continue to have control. You know, it seems like a very easy thing to wake people up to the fact that child sacrifice is bad, but it's a spell, right?
Exactly. And, you know, think about this. How does this happen? How is this able to continue? When you have all these college frat parties and all these secret societies that they like to get into, and the higher up and the more prestigious schools you have, the more elitist type of clubs there are. And there's story after story of, you know, just getting so, so wasted. And then you're in this precarious pose and not necessarily doing anything, but boom, here's your little bit of blackmail for the rest of your life. And on you go to, you know, your job, your career, whether it be captains of industry or whether it be, you know, lawyers or politicians, you have somebody who has something on you, and then they come and they need a favor. And then you do them a favor, they help you, you travel up the ladder. And you are silenced because of blackmail. And this happens all the time. That's their mode of operation. And it's not that everybody has a lust for killing babies or a lust for sleeping with children, but the ones who are up there and doing these evil, vile things, they have such huge reach and such a high throne that they're on, just the sheer fact.
Because they're more controllable.
Yes, but they're ultimately who's in control? The real evil, vile motherfuckers that are doing this. But they're little henchmen all over. And then you've got the web of power and control. But who's, you know, it's not like it's the good old boys club and they're all a bunch of good old guys. No, they are Satanists, you know, and it's like, it's an unfathomable, you know, that's what the story you just played, it got poo-pooed. And I can't remember how and why, but it did. And then that went away. But it was
part of the satanic panic, I think.
But it was, yeah, probably, you know, disinformation programs and whatnot. But it was just so unbelievable. The public were like, oh, this has got to be, thank God it's not real. And now let's go fast forward to our lives now. What are we wanting to accept as reality is, you know, changing little boys into little girls when they're 6, 7, 8 years old, dressing them up as drag queens, and this is their God-given right, and you're a terrible person for getting in the way of this. And it's like, how do we get there so fast? And who's in charge? Crazy psychopaths that have no love of a child's innocence, number one. But the same machinations that allowed that type of environment to go were able to manipulate the playing field so that this is where we are now. And if you don't see it as being an unusual form of satanic type of, you know, if you look at some of these horrible porn sites that have bondage play games and houses, it's so similar to what they're doing to our children, but without penetration. And it's just, it's horrible that this is not even being called down, or that the climate is even such that we're unable to call it down without having people call you a horrible person for not having tolerance. That's demonic,
right,
in itself, in my view.
Yeah, that's definitely understandable. And I have to say, and John, I'm going to give you the floor in a second, but so a little bit of a backstory. John and I have known each other for what? Like
2006,
just shy of 20 years?
2005, maybe. Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah, just shy of 20 years, right?
Yeah.
And how we met is because of the Bible. Honestly, like, we both studied the Bible together. I would say that John knows more about the Bible than most people, and so do I. And you know, it's interesting because somebody that we studied with, maybe under, learned certainly a lot from, was this guy named Josh. And and you know, I've known Josh for just shy of 25 years, right? Like, Josh introduced me to you, I think, John. And so
tongue in cheek. Yeah.
Not really,
Christian
because
Universe,
I think we actually. Yes, I forgot you.
Yeah, we made a joke out
so
of
we started
cold.
A church called. For short, but
yeah.
Because there were so many Christians out there that were just, we would call carbon copy Christians or time punch Christians, who would just go and, you know, learn the bare minimum and yes, exactly. And so even back then we were kind of like fighting against this, and Josh was like, I know I'm going to reach a whole lot of people. I'm going to be famous. And this was before YouTube, you know, this was before like anything that was, you know, basically in the, you know, the social reach realm. Like right now, somebody in their living room with their dog, you know, or dancing in their living room by themselves can be famous on TikTok, right? You know, Josh could have never known that stuff, right? Josh never, you know, it was like, I know I'm going to be famous somehow, but I just don't know how, like, you know, and here we are in this time and space where we can reach so many people with this message that he kind of was right the whole time, but just couldn't envision how it was going to work out, you know? But here it is, like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, you know, Freedomizer, this radio, this show, right? Who knows how many people it can reach? And that, I think, is what Josh was talking about. And I honestly, like, think that's why you're here now on the show. You know, it's God, what does it say? All things work for the good who love God and are called according to his purpose, you know? Honestly, like, that's a big element of this show, too, is that, you know, we all are called, and no matter how far we stray or strayed, God has a plan for us. And here we are many, many years later, doing exactly what Josh prophesied, you know?
Well, yeah, I have a podcast, but it's a D&D podcast. It's not exactly a talk show, but that I've been on for a couple months now with some friends of mine. We just play D&D and record it. But we also have rants too, so we do a little bit of that, and we actually just yesterday did the first podcast as sort of a spinoff, because we always get into these rants in the middle of the game. Sometimes there's technical issues or something, so there's like dead space. We just kind of fill it talking about random stuff, and it's just me and a couple of my military buddies from the Marine Corps just talking about, sometimes we're probably going to do like politics sometimes, maybe have people on if I can find people that want to join us and whatnot, but yeah, definitely a lot of potential there, for sure. We got, I think, like 200 listens on the D&D one so far, so doing okay.
Oh, that's fun.
For being so new, yeah. Yeah,
well,
you still have fun with it.
What platform is that on?
You know what? Here, I probably should be shilling it, so give me just a moment and I'll look it up. I don't really do any of the technical stuff with it. My friend Blake does. So I gotta. No, WordPress. Starting on site now. Okay, it is on. Let me go to the website so I can just. Yeah, give me just a minute on that. I'm sorry.
No problem.
But,
Elizabeth, you just cut him when you find it.
Role playing games. Yeah, okay.
No worries.
Yeah. My signal is not great here. I'm kind of in the middle of nowhere near Escanaba, Michigan, which is in the Upper Peninsula.
Oh,
and it's
I feel for you.
Nowhere
is it. My signal is terrible, and I'm regretting not paying for Wi-Fi now.
Yeah.
The level of patience is non-existent. I got a question for you, John, because you made a comment about into the realm of conspiracy theory. And being with the fact you said, you know, no one really has a lot of faith in the mainstream anymore.
Correct.
What really now? What will be determine what conspiracy is now that the news is not a trusted source?
Yeah, I think you got to use your own brain. Yeah, and you got to kind of listen to what people are saying and if it fits. This is how this is how it works. And I listen to different people, and I haven't listened to a lot of news lately because I've been kind of just enjoying life and kind of been putting that on the back burner lately. But, you know, I listen to Tim Pool and Styx Hexenhammer and sometimes Dave Rubin and a bunch of different people that I like. I listen to them and Jordan Peterson too. And just kind of like – and everybody's got some things right. Everybody's got some things wrong. But you can put together a good picture if you just kind of think about it. And it's like, okay, well, does this make sense? Does it all fit together? I just try to make a picture that is consistent, that makes sense out of what I pick up. And I think that's the best you can do. And I'm probably not right on everything. You know, I'm sure that, I'm wrong on some things. But I think that's the best you can do. Because you can't really trust any, I think, individual. And even if they have good intentions, like I think that Tim Pool is very well intentioned, but I think he goes a little heavy on the Civil War stuff sometimes. So, you know, sometimes you got to take him with a grain of salt, you know. So everybody, I think, has got a little bit off on things, but you can pull truth out of it and you just go with what makes sense.
Yeah, I think the term conspiracy theory was coined by the CIA to discredit anyone that questioned the official narrative of the Kennedy assassination. And
yes,
I really
correct.
Think that we probably
the
need
Warren
to...
The Warren Commission, I think.
Yes, exactly. To have a renaissance of critical thinking and, you know, this one's opinion and this I think we need to try, you know, steer away from trying to label or throw that label around because I don't think it really does any value to anyone's opinion in view of what they're seeing. Because there's so many independent news journalists, even just, you know, you're run-of-the-mill person that lives in New Zealand or the UK or, you know, Guatemala, they are a man on the street giving live footage of what's happening. Oh, that's conspiracy. It's actual a happening, you know, and whether or not it's up to you to determine how viable that seems. And I think critical thinking needs to maybe make a big crack.
Yeah. In history too. Understanding macroeconomics and the Federal Reserve and how all of that came about and how it works is definitely a huge boon when it comes to understanding politics because it revolves around that quite a lot. So that's definitely helped me a lot in sort of building a workable sort of picture of what's going on. Now, I did find the podcast. It is RSS.com is the website it's on. We are on there as Reject Company because we're veterans. So we're a first civilian division.
I like
Reject
it.
Reject Company.
I like
and
it.
And the D&D podcast is called Adventures in Ower. Now, we do get this, you know, fair warning. It is a bunch of Marines on there. We get kind of vulgar, so I don't know, you know, like, so how people might take that are listeners of this station. But we have a lot of fun with it, so, yeah, we definitely can get a little little cringy here and there, so if you're into that kind of thing.
Adults,
it's not for kids. It's definitely, I definitely wouldn't listen to it around the kids. I'll say that.
Okay.
I don't think the internet is a place for kids, actually.
All right. So,
you really mean that
so somebody who's listening in the chat, the live chat, asked if you were taking calls. So, yes, we are.
Absolutely.
So if you want to call in and be a part of the show, we've got about 30 minutes left. The number is 319-527-6208, and then press 1 if you want to give your opinion. So, yes, we are. But, all right, back to
I forgot where we were at now.
We just plugged your D&D channel, you know.
Yeah.
But, honestly,
yep.
So, like,
what do you,
honestly,
what do you guys
how we
talk
are,
about
what
now?
We... Well, that's his D&D Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, it's a role playing game.
What seems to be the topic of conversation between you guys right now? What's the hot topic?
Right at this moment on the radio show? What do you mean between me and my
buddies? You guys were talking about on your podcast and your little D&D.
Well, I just did
chat.
Yeah, for the D&D stuff, sometimes just life's tough. We don't get into the political stuff as much on a D&D podcast. It's more about like war stories sometimes, and some of them are not like PC at all. So there's that, and then daily stuff that we do. And like I said, definitely not for kids. But for the one that we did kind of a spinoff because we thought maybe it would be fun to do one that's just the ranting without the game. So we always start the show with sort of a half, like it's like you're hearing half of a conversation, and we have fun with that to make it sound like it's maybe something really kind of gross or disgusting, but you didn't hear the other half of it, and stuff like that. There's a lot of innuendo and things like that, so that's just military veterans, kind of how we roll generally. So, and there's a couple younger guys in the game too. But it's me and two of my war buddies, and then one guy that was in the Army was on it. He recently had some things he had to go. But the other one that I started, we're just gonna. I did basically just an introduction. So it was just a half hour thing. It's not up yet. I don't think that's gonna be up. But we recorded it yesterday, and then next week we're going to talk about sending money to Ukraine, all the money we're sending to Ukraine. And that's kind of the topic of discussion. And then we got some other stuff we want to talk about. They'll probably kind of stem from that. And that's a plan for next Saturday. What was that?
Are you really sending money to Ukraine?
No, not us personally. The U.S. government sending money to Ukraine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No,
we
are not.
Like a fundraiser. I'm like,
like Jerry for Jerry's kids. Yes.
No. All of my spare change goes to supporting young women in college. So they can get through college. That's where my spendable income goes. So,
The live chat person wants to call in, says that He's dialing and getting a busy signal to the 319-527-6208 phone number. So maybe I'll...
Is it because I'm on and you only have one caller?
No. We've had like 10 callers before.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ask him to try again. Dial again. He did the right number.
Yeah. All right. Try again, caller. Maybe I can do like a direct something, but I don't know. Well, there's a person. My husband just got home. There's like a person who, on the live chat who wants to call in, and he's saying that it's a busy. Can you call in, Dave, real quick and see if you can? The phone number, when you're ready, is. Not ready.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Joe.
Yeah,
I love
happy
this birthday
late.
Gift. I want one.
Yeah.
I want one.
But
too.
John and Elizabeth, it's both their birthdays. Okay. Yeah, today. Okay. He says happy birthday. All right, call in. The call in number is 219-527-6208. And push 1 to be led into the waiting room. He's also getting a busy signal. I don't know what's going on.
Oh,
we're going to have to talk to Freakmeister.
Well, technical
maybe
issues,
we've
I
been,
guess.
We've been censored of sorts. You know, there's a lot
I'm
of
I'm glad
going
I got
on.
In when I did.
I tried to read my email. I get a lot of my news from the email because they've taken down so many people's sites. And to click into any stories, I got the article has been taken down at the owner's request, and the URL site is not open. So it's just mass censorship disguised by technical error nonstop. We're living in North Korea, North Korea-style government censorship under the guise of a happy, new, gentler regime with the... a loving, caring DOJ at the helm. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? It's usually user error, you know, but I always just go with government trying to screw with me. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
It's
your default state.
Google is their propaganda.
Let's see.
The Ministry of Funny Walks.
Yeah, no, there's another person in the chat saying, putting up the phone number, but my husband just called the phone number, and it's also getting a busy signal. So this might be a technical problem with Freedom. We'll see. Because, you know, Elizabeth, we've had, you know, 10 people on the line.
Yeah. We've had, well, at least 6, Lily, Ty, a couple other people all together.
Well, yeah, and then like some of the topics, like some of the busy, like I did a show about having San Diego parents call in about the vaccine, and that was a ton of people too, a ton of people.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a lot, you know, but we only have 3 right now, so that's not the issue.
Interesting.
Okay, so all right, so sorry about the technical issues, but let's see.
Well, now for something completely different.
Yeah, that stinks.
You know, this is not the first time in history that this has happened, and it all kind of like lays upon how you take it. I remember, you know, Monty Python was a fantastic comedy troupe in the 70s in England, and they just nonstop trashed their government because they had one of the most ridiculous governments at the time. And they would often, you know, do little skits about the Ministry of Funny Walks and how insane their parliament and legislatures were. And I think we need to maybe up it to that level where we just simply don't we are living a clown world, and perhaps treat them as such, like just a bunch of clowns, and not do the, oh no, what are they going to do to us next, and more of a
Danielle, you brought up the Bible and how he's not and everything. I'm not sure if there was like was there like something you were going with that, or you're just talking about the reach that we have now?
Well, everything, this whole show is about this. This whole show is about where, you know, like I never thought I would run for Congress. I never thought I would do a podcast radio show, but this is where I am, and you know, God is the reason that I'm here. Like, through all of these years, like, for better or for worse,
that's right.
This is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right, and I had a thought on that that I lost, and I got it back now. And it's to be honest, the timing for when you invited me on was really, I don't know what the word is, but it was really good, I guess.
Coincidental?
Because
there are
no
coincidences when it comes to God.
Sure, right. Because I was not really in a state of mind to be the person I am, even maybe a few weeks ago or a month ago. So I've gained a lot of wisdom recently, I guess, I might say.
Well, partially,
it's because I'm on a... It's not for great reasons, I guess. I mean, partially it's that I'm on a second divorce with a pretty awful marriage that I was in for the past couple of years, and getting free of that, which isn't exactly a very Christian thing to say, I guess, but I learned a lot from that experience.
Nobody deserves to be in toxic hell, you know?
Yeah. She's very good at making me feel bad. She's very good at making me feel bad if I didn't go along with, you know, what she wanted to do with the finances and things like that. And as a result, I kind of ended up in a lot of debt, and my credit is in the dumps, and a number of other things. But I eventually got the I don't know if you call it courage or the willpower to kind of get myself out. So it's been, and I learned a lot from the experience too. So, and I've matured a lot since then. So, I was just bringing up the timing, I guess, was spot on.
Well, that's good.
God's timing is always perfect. You know that.
Mm-hmm. It's probably, maybe it's just confidence in myself from dealing with the situation. Might have a lot to do with it. It's the first time in my life, I think, that I've kind of taken charge for my own, maybe my own benefit or my own, because I've gotten out of bad positions before as far as relationships go, but usually it's because the other person left me and I lucked out, or it's because, you know, there was someone else that came along that I really liked or something like that. But this is the first time where I got myself out just because it was the best thing to do or the best thing for me. So it's really... a good experience in that regard. So,
whose dog is that?
My comment. I'm in a semi truck, so there's no dogs in here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, exactly. And God's timing is perfect, you know. So,
it's interesting how we
end up where we end up, you know.
I do have a Bible issue that maybe because I actually brought it up to Josh, but he didn't get back to me on it, and it was a while ago. So there's the verse that is something to the effect of, when Jesus says before Moses, I am, the I am reference, right? And I was going back and forth with somebody about that. And in my position is that when he said, I am before Moses, or before Moses, I am, he was referring to before Moses in authority and not chronologically speaking. So I got out the Strong's Concordance. I'm like, okay, let me look up translation. But as it turns out, it is actually a chronological statement, and Jesus is saying that he was around before Moses, sure enough, which is a problem for me when you look at the other references. When he says, before he goes to the cross, he says, thine will, not mine, be done. So he's praying to his Father, saying, your will, not my will, meaning the will of Christ is not the will of God. It's two separate things. But Christ submits to the will of God. But so anyway, that was kind of an issue for me. And I do have a hard time. I don't know what the word is. Just making these two things work together, I guess.
Right.
In my mind.
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that Christ says that he has not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill, right? And so,
mm-hmm.
You know, Moses has to do with giving laws to the bondage, right? So, you know, Moses is wandering around in the desert after the Israelites are freed from bondage in Egypt, right? So they're wandering around in the desert. Generations of them were, under, Egyptian law. So, basically Moses goes up and brings down, the law, the Ten Commandments for people who had no law, for, Jewish people, Israelites who had no law, right? And so, so when Jesus says, I have not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill, to me, that means that Jesus fulfilled things like the sacrifice laws, the Levitical laws, that basically were part of the Jewish culture, and that what Moses was attempting to put into meme form, right, with the Ten Commandments. We've got these are just the most important, right? But there's all these other Levitical laws. Now, Jesus comes and says that all these laws, the sacrificial laws, you can argue the cleanliness laws, but I still, think that that's destroying the laws, right? And so basically I think that Jesus is talking about his authority is to fulfill the laws that Moses was still under. Does that make sense?
I think so. I guess it's more of a Trinity thing, because it seems to be establishing that Jesus is saying in that verse that he was around before. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't. It might have been. Was it Abraham? I don't remember the exact reference now.
I've heard it described as, Jesus came down and took a form of man and brought our sins back. But prior to that, Jesus had many other roles that he fulfilled. He was Michael, the archangel, and helped with the war of the heavens, cleaning the heavens. And I heard that, with that in mind, he was used as God's right man, and perhaps was even when the burning bush spoke to Moses, that was Christ in his form in that act. I don't know if that resonates at all with you, but I found that quite interesting that he wasn't just sitting around doing nothing until he came down.
John, are you familiar with the tomes, T-O-M-E-S, the tomes?
No, I don't think so.
So basically, it's reference to, okay, so say we're talking about Noah and the flood, right? We can also talk about the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was from the Sumerian text, who also talks about a massive flood. Who, you know what I mean? Cultures who could never have known each other, who never have communicated, according to our history, but all knew the same story, all knew the same fact. All, you know, these stories were passed down generation after generation, right? Which in some people, you know, some people say that invalidates the Bible, but for me, I think it validates it, right? These are cultures who could have known each other, never could have, you know, communicated back in the day, but did.
Sure.
For some reason.
And had,
you know,
had a similar story and whatnot, sounds like, from what you're saying.
Basically, virtually the same story. Not similar, virtually the same.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's interesting then. I didn't know about that. But, I would agree that doesn't – yeah. That's more of a confirmation than a
– Yes, it is more of a confirmation. And the fact that we know that the Bible was corrupted at some point, right, the Nicene Creed, the Constantine Council, you know, basically integrated a whole lot of pagan beliefs into our Bible, I think that, you know, the tomes, you know, the universal truths between, you know, recorded history and culture, all coming together and saying the same things, those are the truths that we need to focus on. Have you ever heard of Graham Hancock,
John? No, but it sounds a lot like a Jordan Peterson point of view. So what you were saying about the culture of it. So that's very familiar in that way.
Well, Graham Hancock says that we're a species with amnesia, that we've, that like the pyramids, for instance, these great wonders, right? How did we, it's just this great, you know, mystery how they were able to build these blocks with laser precision, right? That most cultures can't even do now, you know? And basically his theory is that we have many times been able to have technology that was way beyond what we have now. And basically says that we live in the dark ages, right? That, you know, things that we can just barely do now, ancient ancestors could do in the past. And there isn't, and he talks about these great flood myths, stories, and, you know, and all of them basically have humans as the culprit for all of these great, you know, catastrophes and the greed of humanity. It may be that history doesn't exactly repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. And, you know, people talk about the Dark Ages like it was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but is it really that out of the realm when, you know, we see these ancient artifacts and we know now with carbon dating that Egypt is, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, possibly years older than the history books say it is. And we've got like the Göbekli Tepe, I think is how you say it, where it was this, megalithic society that predates anything that our history says, right?
Yeah, listening to a guy.
Are we being lied to?
I was listening to a guy. I can't remember his name, but he's been doing research on the Younger Dryas, what he's finding is that the end of the Ice Age. Well, we're actually technically still in an Ice Age. We're just in an interglacial period, but when the glaciers melted, it happened very rapidly, perhaps from a meteor strike or something like that. And then the Atlantic Ocean rose something like 400 feet, like very rapidly. And also, very interesting thing that He was talking about this in terms of Atlantis. Now, I don't know if I'd buy the whole Atlantis like they were super advanced or something like that, but the idea is, so there were these ice sheets in Canada and on Northern Europe, right? And you know how on a waterbed, if you push on like one side, the other side lifts?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happens with the Earth. So these ice sheets are so incredibly heavy that they were putting downward pressure up in Canada, Northern Europe, and whatnot, that it lifted the Atlantic, land the seafloor in the Atlantic up. And then there was an island chain there. And then once the glaciers melted very rapidly, that pressure was lifted up, and then the middle – so that the middle went back down or went down, sinking the island chain. And it was really interesting. He does a lot of research about ancient civilizations or like pre-civilization civilizations. Man, I wish I could remember his name now. Anyway, he was on Joe Rogan once. Huh?
Michael Tellinger?
Could have been. I can't remember. Okay. It's been a while. Maybe I'll try and find it, and next week, if I remember, I could bring it up. But, yeah, and there's a lot of good research there. And the pyramids, I think they can't actually even date because with carbon dating, you can't carbon date rocks, but you can carbon date, like, plants and things that were living at some point that are in the rocks. But with the pyramids, all the blocks fit so tightly together that there's nothing within them to carbon date. So the reason that they say that the pyramids were built, I think 6,000 years ago, I want to say, or whatever the general thing is, they carbon dated stuff around the pyramids, not the pyramids themselves. And the Sphinx was another big one. The Sphinx had the water erosion on the Sphinx. There was not rain that could have caused that water erosion in that area for like 10,000 years or something like that. So it had to have been built earlier in order to get that water erosion because there wasn't enough rain in the desert there to cause it. And there's a lot of stuff like that. And I don't know that it's a conspiracy, like something where people are trying to hide something. I think maybe it's more like
they definitely are trying to hide something.
I don't know. Maybe. But I want to throw out another angle, a possibility, that at some point in the past, because we didn't always have carbon dating, archaeologists and whatnot went out there, and they made their best guess about it 6,000 years ago. In the scientific community nowadays, to go against whatever the established narrative is, like you get cajoled and you get made fun of, and it's really hard to do that. And I wonder if they just don't want to go, no one wants to go against that really because they don't want to be seen as a lunatic. They're worried about the social consequences.
Well, most of them, they don't want to lose your funding, but you've got your rock stars like Hancock and Michael Tellinger and, my God, a shame on me, there's a couple other people who are there to speak the truth because the rocks tell the story. And, you know, it reminds me of there's a scripture in the Bible that that the rocks would cry out if you did not take up the truth with me, as Christ said. And the rocks speak volumes of really what hit the the only it's written in stone.
And another thing,
with a straight face.
Another thing I think that people don't realize or understand is that if for some reason civilization were to disappear, every building and every man-made structure on the earth would be completely gone in 10,000 years. There'd be nothing left if it weren't maintained.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah.
So, like, if there were things like that in the past, like 20, 30, 100,000 years ago, there would be no evidence left of it today.
And yet there is, because there's evidence that everything was buried in mud. You dig deep enough and you've got other civilizations just living under there. They find them
all
the time.
That's true, too. But we're talking about things like that are put in our history books, like the pyramids and the Sphinx, right? Like that clearly have water damage on them, clearly have water damage mm-hmm. in the middle of the desert. And so to John's point, I actually believe that the Atlantis story probably, in my opinion, was the eye of the Sahara. So in the Western Sahara Desert, there is this basically it's called the Reshot structure, but it's in Mauritania. And that right there could have been, it's this crazy structure. I should put a link to this in the chat, but.
And yeah, I know you're talking about. And the funny thing is there's so many other points on the earth that has the same type of thing, where in the middle of the Atlantic, how many ancient civilizations just as worthy as Atlantic have disappeared? And and it's almost like we think we are all that in a loaf of bread, in a bag of chips. And there's all of these just unbelievable civilizations under the ocean, under the desert, under our feet, and in plain sight in the Grand Canyon, away from us. It's just fascinating that they get stuck on Atlantis, but there's like five other ancient, unbelievable civilizations that were once and then are no more. It's amazing. I wonder if, and it's not like if, it's a question of when, because it seems as if we have been wiped out many times on a regular cyclical basis. How long would it take for the new group of people to figure out what the pyramids were if they happened to survive this one? How long would it take them to?
We just hit 90 seconds. I'm sorry. We're probably at 60 seconds.
Now, no worries. Okay.
Spoiler alert. The pyramids were, they were power stations.
Yes, they were. Beacons, I think beacons too. I heard tell that the Watchers were people that just tried to figure out where the hell they were by charting the stars because they were lost. It took forever to figure out what part of the universe they were. So, John, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you come back next week because I really
I probably will.
Cool.
And we'll talk, side note, because I have possibly a potential proposition for you for another assignment. So, but we'll talk soon. But until next week, thank you all for joining. Mom, thank you so much for your Twitter files commentary. John, please come back. Elizabeth, thank you for being my rock. Happy birthday to everybody whose birthdays are on this show today.
All the birthdays. Yep.
Yay. Happy birthday. Love you all and talk to you soon. Share if you can. Goodbye.
All right. Have a good night.